The Senate Capital Investment Committee come to order. It's March 14th, 2012. It's 6 o'clock or thereabouts. We'll get started. There's, I believe, 12 individual hearings that we're going to have tonight. We're going to, just by virtue of the number of hearings, have to be fairly concise and limit our time, and so the time for each group will be about 10 minutes. It will be 10 minutes, I will tell you, and Beth Kleinbold has a little kind of a reminder sheets here, 5 minutes, 2 minutes, and I think it's thank you or something thereabouts. And so we'd appreciate if you can if you can kind of stick to the signal. And we'll start this evening with Senate File 1516, the Mankato Civic Center, Senator Kathy Sharon.
Thank you. May I just clarify on the timing issue? You mean to start that after I'm finished, right? The timing is for my testifiers? Okay.
Kathy Sharon, I think we have to kind of do it the old-fashioned way.
Don't you talk to come.
There's 1 minute.
Welcome, Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Senator Senjum. I appreciate the time. Because of the time limit, I simply will introduce that we are seeking $14.5 million bonding appropriation for our Mankato State University Arena and expand the Events Center Auditorium. I will introduce the presenters. I want to first, the two people at the table that I want you to meet is Shirley People, who I think many of you already know. She is not only the executive director of University Event and Meeting Services, but she's also the president of Mankato's Convention and Visitors Bureau. And Jonathan Zert is on my left. He is the executive director of the Mankato Growth in Mankato, and they will be speaking to the project.
And Senator Sharon, and this won't go against your time. I've just been informed by my assistant that the Civic Centers will get 15 minutes. So
yes.
You get five more.
Thank you.
The scheme will be the same.
And starting now, right? Yeah.
Not quite. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Your name, and we appreciate your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify this evening. My name is Shirley People, and I am the board chair of the Greater Mankato Convention and Visitor Bureau. I would like to describe the project that we are proposing. The City of Mankato, in partnership with Minnesota State University, is seeking $14.5 million in bonding appropriation to remodel and expand our arena, which currently houses our Minnesota State University's men's hockey program. This remodel and expansion will enable us to accommodate both men and women's hockey training facilities in our current arena, which in turn will ensure gender equity between women's and men's hockey. Minnesota State's lease with the city will be revised to allow year-round utilization of both men's and women's hockey games and practices. The remodel and expansion of the arena space for the year-round utilization of men and women's hockey will, however, have a domino effect and will limit the facilities needed to host concerts, conventions, trade shows, and expos. This limitation of facilities will result in lost revenue for the Greater Mankato area. Proper facilities are the tools needed by the Convention and Visitor Bureau to produce a marketable product. Therefore, the addition of a multi-functioning auditorium and additional breakout rooms is necessary for the Convention and Visitor Bureau to possess the tools necessary to bring dollars in from surrounding states such as Iowa and South Dakota. Thank you.
And now it's Jonathan Zert.
Welcome to committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jonathan Zert. I serve as the president and CEO for Greater Mankato Growth. And let me just tell you who we are. We're an integrated Chamber of Commerce economic development organization. We have about 800 member businesses that make up our organization. So my purpose here is to convey to you the thoughts of the majority of our business community. There's very strong support for this project. In fact, earlier this year, we surveyed our members of the business community, asked them what they thought of this project and of its merits. 85% of our members told us that they favored this project. They liked it. They thought it was a good investment, and they thought it made sense from a regional marketplace standpoint and for the state in general. That's a pretty high number anytime you survey members of the business community to see the 85% of anything. So what I can tell you is some of the reasons why they do like it. First and foremost, they like the partnership aspects of this project. They understand that this isn't just a community type of a center, but first and foremost, this is a higher education project related to hockey facilities for Division I hockey for men and women. What they like about that is, in addition to that investment, you have these adjoining or ancillary facilities that are part of a major complex that then permit other types of economic business development types of activities that happen in the regional marketplace. So that partnership aspect of leveraging dollars, tax dollars, to them makes a lot of sense when they can see $14.5 million being leveraged for what otherwise might have to happen in independent arenas or other types of facilities. So partnership to them as a business person, leveraging dollars, makes a lot of sense. Second, as a regional marketplace, the impact that the Greater Mankato Marketplace has on southern Minnesota is pretty profound, and all we'd need to do is point to the recent report that was done by the University of Minnesota at the end of last year, where they looked at regional trade centers across the state. And in that work that they did, they identified the Greater Mankato Marketplace as one of four Level 1 trade centers in the state. Now, while that might not be significant, what was relevancy related to its growth in the last number of years, the last decade, 128% increase. But even more impressive is this figure they used at $17,000 per capita. All that we can take from that figure is that when you look at the per capita impact in a marketplace like Mankato, it's because of the expansive regional footprint that it serves. As you heard Shirley Pipo say earlier, there's tremendous amounts of business that flow into Minnesota from places like northern Iowa that otherwise wouldn't be spent in Minnesota and be available to us as a state. So we like that aspect from a regional marketplace standpoint. If I look closer into the community from an economic standpoint, you have a brochure or a flyer that talks about the values of this project and some of its specifics. I'd point out a couple of things about direct economic impact right in the marketplace surrounding it. 20 new hospitality businesses that have been grown or generated because of the presence of this center, 60 other professional businesses that located in the marketplace, 520 new employees, 400 existing jobs. That's nearly 1,000 jobs that have been created in the center, in and around that arena since its inception, and tax increases that are in excess of 120% increase. So we know the direct economic impact, business creation activity is there. In addition to that, I'd also share a story with you about a multinational or a global company in our marketplace that produces generators called MTU Onsite Energy. This is a business that has its footprint across a pretty big span of the globe. It's headquartered in Germany. This business has about 400 folks that are employed in our marketplace, and every year they do a sales expo where they bring folks in from across the country and across the globe, about 500 people. If this center didn't exist in Mankato, then they would hold that meeting in places like Chicago or Las Vegas. Minnesota never having an opportunity, one, to capture that kind of business activity in the state, or two, be even exposed to 500 international and national travelers that are coming. In addition to not just serving that business, there's a robust supply chain that works with that business, not just in the greater Mankato marketplace, but south central, southwestern, Minnesota, and even into the Twin Cities. It all serves those businesses. So their proliferation in the marketplace means big things for our state from an economic standpoint. And finally, what I'd wrap up with is you may have some questions about the facility itself or its relationship to MSU and the hockey arena and hall that works. I'll defer any questions you'd have about that to Pat Henches, who's our city manager, and Rick Straka, who's our vice president for administration for MSU, who both could speak to either one of those if you have questions. Thanks for your attention, and thanks for your interest in our project.
Thank you, Mr. Dirtz.
Thank you very much. I would like to invite now, perhaps you could free these chairs and allow Rick Straka, who's vice president of Minnesota State University Mankato, and Pat Henches, the city manager of Mankato, to the table. They may make some brief comments and then answer questions if you have them.
Welcome to you both. You may start, depending on which one wants to start.
Chair Senjum, the committee members, my name is Rick Straka. I'm the Vice President of Finance and Administration at Minnesota State University Mankato. Again, I think some of the things that we find very important about this request is we have a very long and rich history of partnership with the city of Mankato. And when this partnership was first started with the original building, instead of asking for a building on campus, we really like the idea of a multi-use shared facility. It makes a lot of sense. And by doing the addition that we're we're doing here, instead of asking for a separate facility or having separate facilities downtown and on campus, by having one facility that we can share and get the synergy from different types of activities, we just think that makes a lot of sense for the taxpayers, that we're not coming to you for two projects, we're coming together for one, and we think that makes a lot of sense as we move forward. It's just one of the many ways that we partner with the city of Mankato.
Thank you very much. Mr. Henches.
Thank you, Senator Senjum. Again, I want to emphasize that all of our event centers around the state all have a unique niche and all have a very strong purpose for regional development and regional support of the state economy. And ours is a very unique one. It's very multi-purpose. It is built on a lot of private-public partnerships in the various utilization. And that's the emphasis and that's the message that we want to look at. We don't look at Rochester or St. Cloud as competition, Bemidji. We look at it as something that complements the state economy, just as our center with that multi-purpose use and multi-purpose design is something that I think the state should look very closely at in terms of supporting, and likewise the other centers that are before you and have been before you in the past.
Okay, thank you very much. Question, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to tell the committee how important it was for Bemidji State when they partnered with the city of Bemidji on their facility and making sure that Mankato, that the hockey program there has a home. Right now they don't have a home, and I don't know if you spoke to this. I'm sorry, I was a little late. But it's really difficult for any sports at any university to not have a home. And I believe right now that Mankato or Minnesota State, Mankato, does not have a home. They have ice that they play on that's somewhere close to where they practice, but it's not their home, and I think it's a great project.
Great. Other questions? Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd also just like to have a compliment, if I could. 10 years ago, it was the first time I ever went to Mankato, and it was a result of my daughter being recruited to play there for the team. And I have since two additional daughters went there, and I almost consider it a home away from home. It's a wonderful community. They've really put their proposal together. It's a great partnership, and I just want to thank everyone for their efforts and also Mr. Henches for just a lot of other things that he does that I'm aware of.
Absolutely. What else? I think you still have some time. if you want to advocate. anything else?
No, as a matter of fact, if we leave with you having some extra time, that
might
leave a nice
good thing.
Taste in your mouth.
That is a good thing. That is something we remember.
That's right.
And let me just offer on behalf of the committee once again, thank you for a great visit to you and Mankato, and as we were making our tours. We certainly do appreciate it, and thank you for coming tonight.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Langston.
I'd just like to mention that the Senate has passed this project before.
Thank you, Senator. Well, what is your process now? Will this be laid on the table for consideration, or what is the process?
Yes, all these will be laid on the table for consideration going into the omnibus bill.
Thank you.
Okay. To ask, are there any opposing views towards this project? Okay. Well, just to be fair, okay. Next up, Senator John Peterson. Senate File 292, the St. Cloud Civic Center. Senator Peterson and Teresa Bonin from the Chamber of Commerce. Welcome to both.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We have before you tonight Senate File 292, which is a $10.1 million request. But it's important to note that the residents of central Minnesota have already invested $22 million, which I hope that you recognize is well above the 50% match and really is approaching two-thirds rather than half. And I want to talk to you a little bit about the two roles that I have had the privilege of playing in the life of this project. Back in 2008, I was down in this building and in the state office building testifying in favor of this project as a city council member from St. Cloud. And in 2010, after this project was line item vetoed by Governor Plenty. I was on the city council that voted to move the first part or the first half of this project forward without the state's help. And now I serve on this capital investment committee with many of you faced with a similar decision and a need that we have in central Minnesota. This is the fifth consecutive year that this project has appeared before this legislature, and quite frankly, the request has not changed at all. It's exactly the same, and I hope that you honor that request as it moves forward through this process. Each year we've been to the Capitol since 2008, either the governor or the legislature has supported this project in the past. And I want to offer a special thanks to Senator Langseth in particular, who's supported this project in the past as chair of this committee as well. Over this time, we've been to the legislature, and we've had broad-based support from legislators, really, from both parties and across the aisle, so to speak. This project was approved by the governor and the legislature, as I mentioned, in 2008. And went much farther than really any other phase one part of a project that I have ever seen or experienced before. St. Cloud, not only with that phase one dollars, we actually completed the standard construction and planning documents that you normally see, but we also moved a business, and we purchased basically an entire city block and tore that building down and closed a street. We moved utilities, and in 2010, we had the construction site ready to go. And so you can imagine a community that's got a vacant city block in the downtown metro area and the challenge that the city council was faced with when that project did not make it into the bonding bill in 2010, which was the motivation for me as a council member to try and move this project forward as a community. In 2010, with the legislative session that completed without an agreement, that's when we faced that decision. We did not point fingers. We were not critical of any of the events that happened. We simply found a solution and moved forward with the city's portion of that project. You may remember that the city had planned to spend $15 million on phase two, and we had asked to be matched from the state with the same $15 million. As I mentioned, we spent $22 as a community. And you know what? That money went much farther because of low bond rates that we're experiencing across the entire state now, and also an extremely favorable construction marketplace that we saw in 2010 with this initial bid went out and brought the residents and of Minnesota significant savings. With that, I would like to introduce Ms. Teresa Bonin, the president of the St. Cloud Area Chamber.
Welcome, Ms. Bonin, to
thank
the committee.
You. Chair Senjum and committee members, thank you for having us here this evening. And my name is Teresa Bonin. I'm president of the St. Cloud Area Chamber of Commerce, which has a membership of 1,000 business community members. And we are the original five-star Chamber of Commerce in the state of Minnesota, which we're very proud of. I've met many of you before, and we've talked about this project and the immense support that the business community holds for this project. This building was opened just a few months ago. I want to give you just a couple of statistics on what that has accomplished. But first of all, I'll tell you, I have been chamber president for 14 years, and the first project that I worked on when I walked into the chamber was the Civic Center expansion. And at that point, we had support from the city. We've been through a couple of mayors since then. Now we have Mayor Kleiss, who very much wanted to be here this evening but couldn't, so we bring you greetings from him. Most of you know him as a past colleague here in the Senate. He is an excellent mayor and has worked tirelessly on this project. So I just hope you had the opportunity to talk to him in the last couple of days whenever he was here to discuss the Civic Center project. Right now, the Civic Center is now called the St. Cloud Rivers Edge Convention Center, and it is open. We just hosted the largest farm show in a five-state region. We had 340 exhibitors this year. That is compared to 240 last year because the facility is so much bigger. So our vendors were much happier. If you know, there are more farmers in Stearns County, or more cows in Stearns County than there are people. So farming and agriculture is huge for us, and we welcomed 4,000 farmers into the Civic Center, all with money in their pockets after a great season last year, and they were spending money. So we had a lot of happy vendors as well. That couldn't be that way, except that we have this new expanded center. Also, Pleasureland RV hosts an annual event in there. They really wanted to expand. And I just talked to their owner, Dan Pearson, last week, and I think the event was about 2 weeks ago. He reported that he sold 247 units of those big RVs over a two-day weekend, and that was compared to 180 last year. And that is a direct impact of having a bigger showroom floor for those products that are sold right in the St. Cloud area. Our downtown merchants support the project, as well as our businesses also support the 1% food and beverage tax extension that the city council uses to fund the city's portion. Our chamber houses the Convention and Visitors Bureau. The chamber signs the contracts with the area cities to work with that Convention and Visitors Bureau, and they are actively marketing and filling the facility right now. So that's all the good news. We see the center as an anchor for downtown. It's fueled growth and development. The hotels have expanded. One in particular has completely remodeled and are welcoming more visitors. We also have a brand new restaurant that renovated two old historic downtown buildings and is open now. That was a multi-million dollar investment in our downtown that would not have happened except for this expansion. The building is phenomenal, but the bottom line is that we need to complete the project. We are going to really be in a bad situation in about 2 to 3 years if we don't finish our parking ramp, our walkways, some exterior pieces to the building, and some of the interior space that we've held off on because we just did not have the total funding to do that. So I really request that you examine this carefully. As my colleague Jonathan Zirt from Mankato said, every one of these are unique and they bring something different to the state. We've been at this point for the last 5 years, and we really want to get this project completed and done so we can move ahead with even more positive projects in the St. Cloud area. And I will turn it back over to Senator Peterson. Thank you.
Senator Peterson. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Just in conclusion, I hope we've made it clear, and I want to end the presentation making it clear we cannot complete this project without your help. And quite frankly, we'll have no choice but to keep coming back with this request in the future. And as we have really since 2008, we'd be grateful for your special consideration of this project as you begin to evaluate these as we move forward.
Thank you, Senator Peterson. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and either Senator Peterson or President Bonin. How were you able to reduce the ask from the state from $15 million to $10
million? Senator Peterson?
Yep. Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, we basically had reduced bond rates. We actually have tapped out now basically a food and beverage tax that we did not have or were not using before. And then essentially it was the low bond rates and then the significant savings we saw as the economy declined from 2008 when we had the original budget put together until 2010 when we bid the project. Most of the savings came from those two areas. The cost of money significantly less, and then the lower bid price that actually came in under what we had budgeted.
We are tapped out now, though. Mm-hmm. There's nothing more, so we really need the funding to complete.
Any other questions? Senator Peterson, I just kind of curiosity question. The city's put $22 million into this facility so far, and that is about for 35,000 square feet, I think, as I read your sheet. Do you remember along the way that what the square footage cost on this building was? And if you don't, that's fine.
Yes. Chairman, I don't recall. I don't right off the top of my
okay,
head.
No problem.
We can get that to you, Senator.
No problem. That's fine. Just curious. How much? Senator Metzen?
No, I just typically.
Well, you're a banker. You should know this.
We've been hearing about $200 a square foot, so I don't know if that's. I think that's close.
My hope, Mr. Chair, Senator and members, Peterson. My hope is that this committee continues to recognize our intention is not to raise the bar for other projects, but just my hope is that you'll recognize Central Minnesota has really gone far above what the required match is, and I hope that you reward that effort. I hope you reward that investment because it really is exceptional. I can't say I've ever seen another project that's where the local match has been two-thirds when really the requirement to get into this bonding bill is only 50%.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? If not, thank you, Senator Peterson, Ms. Bonin, for being here tonight.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Senator Tomasoni?
I'm just wondering which one of these two is really guilty for that guffaw the other night.
For that what?
That little miscommunication thing the other night. One of you is guilty, but I'm not sure.
Mr. Chair and members, last night was St. Cloud Day at the Capitol, and I think Senator Tomasoni is referring to, as usual, Senator Tomasoni was on time. The rest of the legislature was late, so by the time you left, we had many, many more legislators showing, so I wish you could have stayed around a little longer, including our majority leader as
and
well.
We will make sure you get a personal invitation next year. Thank
that.
You.
Well, there's a story there someplace. Okay, any further comments on the St. Cloud project? If not, the Rochester Civic Center, welcome Mr. Hansen, Mr. Jones, and Mr. Wade.
Good evening, Senator Senjum.
Good evening, Senator. Pardon me.
Not yet.
Good evening, Mr. Mr. Hansen.
Well, it's great to see you. And Senator Langseth, it's kind of scary being up here with Senator Senjum having the gavel this year and not you. So
that is scary.
It is scary, isn't it? I think we all agree on that. But I want to thank
welcome
you.
Welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you, Senator Senjum, and members of the committee. I'm Denny Hansen, president of the Rochester City Council, and we're here today to ask your support for $35 million in state bonding money for the Mayo Civic Center Convention Center expansion project. The state funding will be matched by over $38.5 million from our community for our share. It's shovel-ready. Back in 2008, you were gracious enough to grant us $3.5 million in state bonding money to prepare the plans. The plans are complete, and they're ready to go out for bid. The project is strongly supported by the Mayo Clinic, the Rochester Area Chamber of Commerce, the Rochester Hospitality Industry, the Rochester Convention and Visitors Bureau, and our area labor unions. The reason that all these groups support this project is the primary purpose is to improve our area and our state economy by creating jobs. As you hear in a minute, the project is estimated to increase our economy by $30 to $40 million annually and to increase state sales and income tax by about $3 million annually. The state's investment in this project will be repaid by new taxes and the creation of hundreds of jobs. The primary purpose of this project is to attract new conventions to the state of Minnesota. And Senator Senjum, you and I were on the city council for many years back in Rochester. We had a lot of great, great projects, a lot of great, great things happened. But from my perspective today, this is just another piece of the puzzle that will continue to make not only Rochester great, but the state of Minnesota great. And with that, I will turn it over to Brad Jones, the executive director of the Rochester Convention and Visitors Bureau.
Welcome, Mr. Jones.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Senjum and members of the committee. Appreciate your time this evening. Articulating on what President Hansen said, this is a convention center project. Rochester currently does not have a convention center or convention facilities. We have a multi-purpose civic center with arenas and other floor space, but we currently do not have a convention center. And our business community has come together and chose a direction to partner with the state and really leverage our unique position within the global economy. What we would like to do is go after like markets, like medical destination markets, Cleveland, Jacksonville, Baltimore, Houston, etc., and go after the convention business that comes to those medical centers. And we're uniquely positioned to do this. We already really have all the infrastructure needed to do so, with the sole exception of convention center facilities. You'll see in your packets that we've provided you this evening that this project will increase direct spending in our region by $20 million annually, and that will have a net economic impact of about $40 million annually. We'll create 400 construction jobs and then sustain roughly 400 permanent jobs within our hospitality industry, which is the second largest employer in our region at 12,000 employees, full-time employees. So this is all about bringing new visitors to our region and the state, one that we aren't doing right now. We're well poised to do this, and you'll notice in your packet a sheet that says top 50 medical convention opportunities. This is just the tip of the iceberg. We've spoken to many of these groups, and they would love to meet at the doorstep of Mayo Clinic in Rochester and the state of Minnesota. These represent 155,000 participants, 445,000 room nights, and roughly $107 million in direct spending, just these 50 alone. You'll see on the reverse side of that flyer the lost business, and this is in the last 4 years. We've been here at the Capitol and the legislature for the last 5 years with this project, and as President Hansen alluded to, we've received the planning money and we're ready to go. But these lost opportunities are actual business that we've proposed, and they've told us that due to our lack of convention facilities, they chose to go elsewhere. And we lost about 168,000 delegates, roughly $85 million in spending. And just as you can see, the lost spending to the state of Minnesota was $62 million. That means they're not staying here in the state. They're going elsewhere to other destinations for their events. So today we're asking you to partner with us to leverage our unique position within the global economy. There's lots of details here. There's blueprints. There's lots of information. But I'd like to introduce the president of our Chamber of Commerce, Mr. John Wade, to articulate on behalf of the business community.
Welcome, President Wade.
Senator Senjum, it is nice to see you. And to all of the members of the committee, thank you very much for participating in Rochester on tour last week, which brought some 400 people from Rochester, and you were tremendous hosts, and we appreciate that and partaking with us. The Rochester area continues to grow and develop and prosper. We have some 1,360 members of our organization, the Chamber of Commerce, and that includes the state's largest private employer, as well as half of those members having four or fewer employees. This project will help support what we believe are really tremendous times, not only for the community, but hopefully our impact on the state as well. We have some $300 million in private investment that's going to be going on in Rochester in the next several years, $300 million. We are going to create some 10,000 jobs in the next 10 years in that community. So there are a lot of pressures on that number as well, and getting a qualified workforce and a lot of other things to make sure that we are able to realize that dream not only for Rochester but for the state of Minnesota. And as Brad said, we compete not only with the region, and I see that outside of the state of Minnesota. I think the other projects that have been mentioned are tremendous projects and probably deserve your support. We are interested in markets well beyond the boundaries of Minnesota. And Brad articulated some of those communities and those enterprises that might be interested in bringing convention business to Rochester. I think we have underestimated what the return that this convention center will bring to the state of Minnesota. I really do. I don't think we I think we have a much more aggressive impact, both in the short term and certainly in the long term. Not only does the community, does the one employer employ some 35,000, but 40,000 people a day come into that city to work. And a project like this is not only important in the short term, in the perhaps the jobs perspective to build it, but far more importantly long term, we really need the facility to attract the type of convention business that is needed for that community. And it simply cannot be done. As Brad said, we don't have a convention center. We'll do our part. We'll continue to work hard. We'll continue to grow this economy and to create an environment where all business can develop, grow, and prosper. And on behalf of our entire membership, we believe that this project is worthy of your support, and we very much appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Wade. Are there any questions of any of these gentlemen? I do have one, I think perhaps more directed to Mr. Jones. And I'm looking at the lost business page on your handout. Can you tell me, was this over a period of years or a year or a couple of years?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, these were in the last 4 years since we've been up here talking about the project. And these were actually business opportunities that we put forth a proposal to host. There are many others that obviously would be attracted to us if we put a shovel in the ground in this project. But these are just opportunities that we've proposed, and they've said no, and they've gone elsewhere due to not having appropriate convention facilities.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Langsett.
Mr. Chair, this one has been passed by the Senate before also. And I believe the way it figures out the economic spinoff that comes from this project brings more money into the treasury of the state of Minnesota than the debt service. So in a sense, we could do it for nothing.
That's a great point.
Do more of them.
Well, Senator Langsett, help me once again on that one. More the revenue, which well, at least the lost revenue is
the total economic spinoff that comes because of this project will end up putting more money in the state of Minnesota Treasury than what the debt service is on the $38
million. Sure.
We estimate that at a minimum of $3 million a year, Senator.
Yeah, over time, that's true.
You're the new sponsor of the bill.
Bill. I like your way of thinking, Senator.
Further questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Did I hear the estimated number of construction jobs and permanent jobs that – did you mention that? Maybe I missed it, but –
I did, Senator. Thanks. 400 construction jobs, about 1 million man-hours of work in the build-out phase, and we estimate that roughly 400 permanent jobs over time when we're fully operational.
Okay. Thank you.
And Senator, just one quick thing.
Senator,
you know, when I go out to speak
Hansen,
to people in the community, they always ask about, you know, how can you dumb this down for people like me? And I look at this as the city of Rochester is kind of a convenience center. And this is our gas pump. People come in to use the gas, but all the people are working in the convenience center, and that's the people that we're going to put to work in Rochester, are those people in the hospitality industry that pump gas, that work in the convenience stores, that work in the restaurants, the hospitality industry. Everybody in our community is going to have a direct, an indirect but very positive impact from this project. So I think, you know, from my perspective, it's a great project. Again, you and I did some great things when you were on the council in Rochester, and I think you know, this is one that I really am going to hang my head on because I'm very proud of it.
Very good.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Metzen.
Then, you know, if we get that zip train going, we could get the folks down there in a hurry.
You can come down to our convenience center.
You're always welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Any further questions? I think you still have time on the...
We'll yield back our time.
Okay, yield back your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
appreciate
Senator.
You coming up here tonight and sharing
you
your story. Are there any opposing views?
Yes, sir.
Okay. How about, again, I don't claim that we don't have a lot of time, but can you do it in, say, 3 or 4 minutes?
I will try.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Senators, Senator Senjum. My name is Max Sullivan. I'm a small business owner. I'm a homeowner and a taxpayer of Rochester, Minnesota. I have a little different slant on what you've just seen. First of all, they have neglected to tell you that presently we are suffering $800,000 loss per year on a facility that's maxed out in its capability. And they will agree it's maxed out. Not only that, we're over $10 million in the hole on maintenance that has not been paid yet. The biggest concern I have, though, is they have done nothing in their proposal about parking. They say fly in. Well, there's a lot of people that don't like to fly short distances, and there's just no parking available. The second thing is this, you know, once they build this great facility and put in all this convention center things, it's maxed out. There's nothing more they can do in increasing the size of the facility because it's land bound. And I think they need to sit back and look at this with a little bit more seriousness. Where right now their plans are eliminating about 20 to 30 parking spaces that's used by the handicapped. Where are they going to park? The closest parking is approximately a quarter of a mile to half a mile away. And that does not sound like a very good plan to me, to eliminate parking spaces, especially when you have no other parking spaces to add. There's talk of adding some later, but hey, that may or may not happen, and only talking a maximum of about 700. The other thing is the cost. Back to that. Who's going to pay that $10 million maintenance cost? I suspect that's going to be paid for by us taxpayers. Because, and they give you the number, well, we're going to have $3 million. That's their number, not mine. $3 million that we can use for this facility. So $2 million of it right away is gone for maintenance and support of the facility. That means there's only $1 million left for the other facilities, for the roads, for the fire department, the police department. That means the tab is going to have to be picked up by us taxpayers to pay for that while they're spending all that money on the center. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Any questions, Mr. Sullivan? Okay, thank you so much. Moving on then, Senator Rosen. Senator Rosen, Senate file 2215. Minneapolis Education and Cultural Facility Bond Issue and Appropriation. Senator Rosen, we've gone now from 15 minutes to 10 minutes, and we have a judicious timer.
Understandable. So, thank you, Mr. Chair. You took a minute there, but so we're done. So, again, this is another commitment to one of our crown jewels in the state, and it's the Walker Arts Center. Members, you have, instead of going through the slides, you do have a little nice pamphlet here in front of you. And the Walker Arts Center, in partnership with the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board, is requesting $8.5 million in bonding for the renovation of the Minneapolis Sculpture Garden. The renovation of this 11-acre garden has been included in the governor's bonding requests for the full $8.5 million. The garden is a free public park that has become a beloved icon, an important economic development and a recruitment tool for Minnesota. It is nationally recognized and has received over 8 million visitors since it opened 23 years ago. Many of these visitors come from other states and countries. The garden is in badly need of renovation. Its central urban location and proximity to both Hennepin Avenue and the I-394 and I-94 interchange has created harsh environmental conditions. Both vehicle pollution and the heavy use of salt in the winter have had an exceptionally harsh impact on the park. The garden renovation includes a number of major facility repairs and upgrades, including concrete, granite, sidewalk, and lighting fixture repair and replacement, also improvements to the irrigation and security systems, both of which are over 20 years old and needed to be replaced, transplanting, replanting, and removing a variety of plant material, grass, trees, including pines, lindens, oak, maples, arborvitae, and all of which have peaked in terms of their standard urban cycle, life cycle. Work related to the Coles Conservatory. Reconstruction of the garden will make it accessible for all ages and physical ability and make it a model of sustainability and continue its positive impact on Minnesota for the next generation. This renovation project will ensure that the garden remains one of Minnesota's crown jewels. Yeah, it stole my line. Providing the Minnesota community and tourists with a remarkable space in which to escape and experience today's finest outdoor plantings and sculpture. In addition, the project will have an immediate impact on the local economy, driving construction and landscaping purchases and significant employment. And with that, Mr. Chair, I have Olga Viso, director of the Walker Art Center.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good to see you again.
Nice to see you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to come to speak to you. Again, the partnership between the Walker Art Center and the Parks and Recreation Board, and we are coming to you with an $8.5 million request to preserve really one of the great icons of our state, a great cultural and recreational asset that now, after nearly 25 years, is in need of major infrastructure renewal and upgrade to preserve it for indeed another generation of Minnesotans, as well as a significant tourist base that visits the Minneapolis Sculpture Garden. And it opened in 1988 as a very unique partnership between the Parks and Recreation Board and the Walker Art Center. In fact, it was recognized as being a model partnership that many other cities around the country have emulated. And the Park Board provides the land, the 11-acre site on which it sits. And the Walker raised, at the time, $16 million of private funds to do the initial build-out and to provide the 40 sculptures that are there. This is free 365 days a year, free programming, free performances. Over 8 million visitors have come since it opened. So it's been incredibly popular, significantly used. Over 30% of the tourists that come from outside. It's an incredibly significant attendance from both outstate Minnesota, but really internationally. And as I said, it's been recognized nationally as a model. If you look at major sculpture parks that have opened around the country just in the last 10 years, Millennium Park in particular in Chicago, Seattle Sculpture Park, Kansas City at the Nelson Atkins, the Dallas, the Nasher Sculpture Center, these all sent delegations to the garden here to study it and understand that public-private partnership that distinguished that. And they've created that in those cities. If you look at what it cost over the last 10 years to create those parks, it's hundreds of millions of dollars to do it. We did it first. We did it for $16 million. And we're coming to you for an $8.5 million request to ensure that it continues to be the landmark that it is, that it has inspired other communities to create, again, that great cultural and civic and recreational asset. Really, there have been no public monies other than the land provided by the Park Board that have gone into this now. We each provide about $300,000 a year to both maintain the grounds and to maintain the art and provide the free programming. So I would turn to Bruce Chamberlain, who's the Assistant Superintendent of Planning at the Parks and Recreation Board, our partner, to talk a little bit about the infrastructure upgrades.
Thank you, Mr. Viso. Mr. Chamberlain.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. As Senator Rosen mentioned, over 8 million people have visited this park over the last 24 years. It's a beloved icon, but it truly is wearing out. And it's a park that is it is very much based on needed infrastructure, the outdoor infrastructure, the ground, the plants, the retaining walls, the walkways. They're all in need of replacement and rehabilitation. The $8.5 million that we're requesting would completely rehabilitate and rebuild the sculpture park. And it would replace significant aging infrastructure, replace the systems that support the park, and many of the mechanical systems, for instance, in the Coles Conservatory consume tremendous energy and are beyond their natural life cycle. So what we're asking for as part of this project is really for us to be able to replace in total both the outdoor and the indoor, but more significantly, the underground infrastructure and the systems that support the visitors that come to this park. As Olga mentioned, it no longer meets accessibility codes, so one of the things that we will do is do some really minor redesign of the park in order to provide full accessibility for the park. And What that will do is increase efficiency when we are able to reopen the park at its 25th grand opening next year. Increase efficiency, expand accessibility to all visitors, provide for full reconstruction and full replacement of the systems that support the park. One of the things that's really important, obviously, is how important this park is to the competitiveness of this region. And I'd like to introduce John Taft, who's the CEO of RBC Wealth Management.
Welcome, Mr. Taft.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John Taft. I'm the CEO of RBC Wealth Management. RBC Wealth Management is one of the largest financial services firms in Minnesota. We employ a couple of thousand people in the state of Minnesota. And we compete every day for a top talent in the financial services industry with our competitors in money centers like New York, Chicago, San Francisco, Los Angeles. And I can tell you that one of the single most important things when it comes to attracting top talent to our company and to our industry here in Minnesota is today, as it was for me when I moved here from the East Coast more than 30 years ago, is the breadth and depth of the cultural resources in Minnesota and in the Twin Cities in particular. And I would have to tell you that at the very top of that list, almost the symbol or the emblem for many of the people who are coming and looking at our company and at employment opportunities is the Garden. It is truly a gem, and there is really almost nothing like it in other communities. I make decisions, as I know you do every day, in my business about where to invest to get a return. I would have to tell you that investment by the state of $8.5 million in the Garden will return many times over its investment to the state of Minnesota, in my opinion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Taft. Senator Rosen?
Well, again, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and appreciate this. And I think we do need to just step back for a second and remember what's best for the state, what we hold dear. It's the Walker Art Center. It's the Ordway, the Guthrie, or 10,000 Lakes. I've already said this once again today. But this is – we're at the situation with the center that it's major. It's just not just, you know – this is redoing it and making sure that it's sustainable for many years to come, so it's enjoyable, and it brings back, again, as all three have said, the revenue and the attention that this great state deserves. So I hope you take serious consideration of this, Mr. Chair and committee members, and appreciate your support.
Thank you very much. Questions on this project? Senator Wieger.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a great project. We enjoyed the tour. But Mr. Taft, in recruiting – employees, you mentioned how important this was. How about for Vikings? How important is that?
For Vikings?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
It's late in the day. I think that has to do with my co-panel member here. Is that right?
As a recruiter.
Are the Minnesota Vikings important to to potential employees?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I will answer that question seriously, and I would tell you that the pro sports franchises that exist in the Twin Cities, including the Vikings, are important to potential recruits. However, and I will say this as a Vikings fan and a pro sports fan, former pro athlete myself, the cultural resources here, when it comes to recruiting families, are more important than a professional sports franchise, or maybe that stretch, just as important as the professional sports franchises.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Further questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Metzen.
What did you do? What professional sport team did you play for?
Oh, no. I played in the North American Soccer League, which, if you remember, the Minnesota Kicks.
Of course.
What was it called? The Bloomington Stadium. I played for the Connecticut version of the Minnesota Kicks, the Connecticut Bicentennials, which will date my professional sports career appropriately.
Thank you very much. Senator Thomas
will ever live in infamy.
Senator Thomas played for the Italian Olympic hockey team in 1938.
In the 1930s, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being here tonight and presenting your project. And also thank you to the Walker Arts Center for a great visit along the way as we made our tours. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay, Senate File 1550. Senator John Carlson speaking on behalf of the Bemidji Regional Public Television Station proposal.
Thank you, Mr.
Welcome,
Chairman.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Senate File 1550 is a request for bonding for a $3 million match for the Lakeland Public TV. For those of you that are in greater Minnesota, Senator Stump and others, we don't have the luxury of having TV stations locally that we can pick from, that we get to choose many different stations to get our news. We have one, and it's Lakeland Public TV. And we do have news programs. We have wonderful programs. And I think probably the best way to express this is to turn it over to the general manager of Lakeland Public TV, Mr. Bill Sanford.
Welcome, thank Mr. Stanford.
Thank you very much. Chairman Sinjum, thank you. Committee members, thank you for your time. And I'd also like to thank Senator Carlson for introducing the bill and helping to move this forward. Without Senator Carlson, I wouldn't be sitting here right now. So thank you, John. You know, I guess what I've put together, if you look in the black packet, there's a printout of a PowerPoint. I'm just going to review that quickly. I didn't want to go through the time to do a full PowerPoint here. But, you know, I think the first question really is, why should the state invest in Lakeland Public Television? I think, you know, if you're all doing due diligence, you're asking yourself that question for each project that comes in front of you. First off, I think it's clear on the second page, the public says yes. According to a Roper poll conducted in January of 2011, the American public rated public television as an excellent use of tax dollars for the seventh consecutive year, second only to military defense. That's pretty amazing how that's ranked. Public television is ranked as the most trusted and unbiased source for news ahead of all the networks. Public television is ranked at the top in public trust among every age group, ethnicity, income, and education level for the seventh consecutive year, second to courts of law. And public television is also ranked as the most widely used and accepted media brand for children. In addition, Lakeland Public Television is a public asset owned and governed by the citizens that we serve. We're a 501c3 nonprofit corporation owned by the citizens of Minnesota. We have a local board of directors made up of citizens from around the region that govern the organization. And we also have a separate community advisory council made up of individuals throughout the region that give us feedback on the programming that we do and tell us whether we're really meeting the needs of the area or not. And the other thing about public television is Lakeland Public Television provides services that the commercial market won't provide. You know, I think there's questions about should we be funding public television? The commercial networks will take care of that. Well, they won't. If there are things that don't make money, they don't do it. That's the bottom line. One thing that I like to talk about is Lakeland Public TV is the only public station in the state of Minnesota that has a 24/7 channel that's dedicated to educational children's programming. We have a safe haven, and people really like that. I hear from folks all the time. We have the region's only nightly local television news, and I'm not talking about public TV, any television news throughout our region, throughout northern and central Minnesota. We partner with the other public television stations around the state. We provide gavel-to-gavel state legislative coverage on our Minnesota channel that all the public TV stations in the state air. We do primetime state legislative race debates. Now, I know most of the other networks and stations do legislative race debates, but, you know, up in our area, we're the only station that's able to do that. And we take that very seriously. We take that as a responsibility. We don't bury these things late at night or on the weekends in the afternoon. We air these prime time. They're full hour-long debates. We are in prime time Monday through Friday. And we block out about a two-week period. And this year, I think we'll probably do 13 or 14 one-hour debates during prime time over a two-week period. So it's a big commitment, but we feel it's important because we cover such a large geographic area, and people are so, I think one thing that John knows very well is people are really spread out when you get out into rural Minnesota. And a lot of these folks don't have an opportunity to maybe hear a debate that some maybe put on at a city council, or you know, maybe there's 40 or 50 people in the audience. We bring that into their homes so they can get that information. We're a source for local arts and culture. We appreciate the support that we get from the state for through the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and we've really leveraged that, and we do an awful lot of local arts and culture programming. We do local history and documentaries. You can see on this page there's Bemidji Between the Wars. Just this March, we debuted two new docs that we did. One is on the Lake Bemidji Dragon Boat Festival, if you're familiar with that, and the other is a really interesting doc we did about how the a birch bark canoe was made in the traditional Native way, and it was a very interesting program. Another area that we work really hard in is early childhood parenting education, and we partner with the Northwest Minnesota Foundation and other organizations in the region. We are blocks of programming to help educate parents that are in tough situations, low-income, single parents. We give them resources. So, Lakeland Public Television serves a very large region in the state of Minnesota. If you look at the map we've got here, our broadcast area serves about 400,000 people, and in addition, when you consider satellite coverage, we serve over 1 million people in the state of Minnesota. The nice thing about that 400,000 is there is no economic barrier to receive that. In our over-the-air coverage area, you don't have to subscribe to cable or satellite, so if it's a low-income family, they can get public television, they can get local news, they can see what's going on with the legislature, they've got that Safe Haven Kids channel, so it's an important service. And, you know, the next thing I'd like to talk about is why we need a new building, why we're down here talking to you. Lakeland Public Television has occupied the same space on the BSU campus for over 31 years. And we're in our offices, a lot of them are in music practice rooms. And right next door to us, there are working music practice rooms. So it's interesting sometimes to make a phone call. Over the years, we've had a dramatic increase in local programming. We do local news, local public affairs, local arts and culture, history, legislative and campaign coverage. We've grown from one channel of programming that was 16 hours a day to five channels that are 24/7 now. We've doubled our staff. We've increased our technical infrastructure to support this. And we've not only outgrown the physical space, but HVAC systems and AC power are a big problem. And there's no space on the BSU campus. The proposed project is to construct a 23,000-square-foot public media center in Bemidji's South Shore development. The location is chosen. The lot's purchased. The pre-design and construction estimates are completed. Capital campaign is underway for local funding, and we've got over half of the local funds committed, with more than the remaining still we're waiting to hear on grant outcomes, and we haven't even started the public phase of the campaign. So raising the local money, we can do that. I'd also like to point out that one grant that we had already received, $400,000, which is a big grant for this project, is contingent specifically on receiving the $3 million of state bonding. If we don't get the bonding money, that money goes back. We lose it. We're ready to start. We're shovel ready seems to be the term. We're shovel ready. We're ready to go. The lot's there. And we could start as early as this summer. The project budget's $4 million total construction costs, $3 million of state bonding, and $1 million of local match. Now, I realize that's a 25% local match, but, you know, when you're in a community the size of Bemidji, we serve a big area, but we don't serve any big hubs. We serve about 400,000 people, but Bemidji is like 15,000. Brainerd's like 15,000. So raising $1 million in a community that size is no small task. And last, I'd just like to give you a few quotes of what we send out an annual preference poll. And here's a couple quotes from area residents, what they think about Lakeland Public Television. Your stuff is life-changing for us and highly valued. Keep up the good work. This is a local public television station. I love that local news is covered. Public television is great. When I need good factual information, this is the place to be. When we have time to watch, we almost always turn to public television. We appreciate your intelligent approach to programming. We would be lost without public television. Thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
I would just close a little bit by saying when my kids were growing up, I refused to get cable TV. I didn't think it was good for them. And that's my kids grew up on right at about the same time that Lakeland started. That's when my kids were born, and they grew up on Lakeland Public TV. And my son, I'm thankful that he's not going to do cable TV, and they're relying on Lakeland Public TV for their kids, for my grandkids. And Senator Tomasoni, and for all the other hockey fans out there, if you're a Husky fan, a Gopher fan, a Bulldog fan, a Maverick fan, you can sit at home in your easy chair when your team is up in Bemidji playing hockey, because Lakeland Public TV will have it on the air for you.
We have a good partnership with the Event Center in Bemidji. And
thank you, Mr. Stanford and Senator Carlson. We appreciate your trip down from Bemidji. We know that's not an easy trek.
Well, I was going to thank the committee for ordering the wonderful weather today. Yeah. It was actually a very nice drive down. So it's the first time I've driven down and testified when it's 74 degrees.
Thank you. We appreciate you.
Thank you, members.
Your presentation.
Thank you very much.
Next, we have Senate File 385 is the Duluth Wade Stadium Improvement Bond Issue and Appropriation. We are welcoming Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Chair Peterson. And with me, I have Craig Smith, who is with the Duluth Huskies, and also Brian Hansen, who's with the City of Duluth. Members, what you're going to hear about is a great asset in the City of Duluth called Wade Stadium, and the Huskies are just one of many organizations and groups that use Wade Stadium. It's a great regional asset, and it's also a historic landmark within our community. I'm going to ask Mr. Hansen to speak first. This is a legislative priority for the City of Duluth to take care of some needs that we have at Wade Stadium, and then I'll ask Mr. Smith to speak after that about really what some of those issues are, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
Senator Reinert, can I interrupt your presentation there for a moment? Did you have an amendment to offer for this bill at all by any chance? Or
I think there is a – is it an A1? I hope it's an A1. I don't have copies. I don't know if the committee has copies.
Yeah, she's handing them off.
Thank you.
Senator Reinert, maybe you could explain that to us while she's distributing those, if,
sure.
if that's convenient.
I mean, I'm sure that the committee will be glad to see it reduces the amount that we're seeking for this project from $5.7 million down to $4 million.
Thank you. Please proceed.
And I don't know, Mr. Chair, if somebody on the committee would be willing to offer that on my behalf, that would be great.
Senator Tomasoni offers the A1 amendment. Is the amendment just the dollar amount
yes.
change?
Yep, there are okay. three minor changes.
I don't think we'll have any questions relating to that, though. Members, you'll see reductions really there in three different lines. Is there any discussion and questions in regard to that?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Magnus.
I see that the change then on line 11 basically makes this a one-to-one match then non-state and state. Is that I'm reading it correctly?
That is correct.
Yep. All right. Sounds good.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Please proceed, Mr. Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At this point, I'll turn it over to Brian Hansen from the City of Duluth.
Chair Peterson, members of the committee, thank you for having us tonight. I'm Brian Hansen. I'm the Director of Business and Community Development for the City of Duluth. I work in economic development, and I see firsthand what this kind of important infrastructure does in a community, and it really impacts our ability to not only entertain our citizens, but also bring business into our community. This past year, we were successful in bringing a company out of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, to Duluth called Involta. And one of the things about Cedar Rapids that the team at Involta really like is the Cedar Rapids Colonels. Well, we were happy to be able to talk to them about the Duluth Huskies, and we're hoping they're going to be able to take in some games with us this year. Wade Stadium has served as citizens for generations. It's a 70-year-old brick stadium. It's in need of major upgrade and repair. I'm here to request assistance in making this upgrade to serve many future generations. I believe this investment in major repairs and upgrades now is far more prudent than building a new stadium at some time in the future, because the need will exist. Like many others, I have a vision of how great the Wade was and what it could be once again. As I said, it's a 70-year-old facility. It was built in 1941. It's one of three remaining WPA stadiums that are operating in the country today. It's historically significant. It's a beautiful red building that's an icon in West Duluth. But it's definitely seen better days. Today, the Wade has deteriorated brick joints that are causing water damage throughout the facility. The exterior brick walls along the infield are leaning to the point of teetering upon collapse. The city has maintained this facility carefully over the years, and it's never had a major facelift. Now we're looking for that major facelift, and we're seeking some support with that process. The lack of a field draining system in our northern climate doesn't allow for the grass to establish itself. It's kind of interesting that at Wade Stadium, we don't necessarily have to close the field when there is rain. We have to close the field when there was rain, because the water does not drain from that field. And a big part of this project would be to install artificial turf to make that that field a lot more reliable in the future, and also help us maintain, control the costs of maintenance associated with the field, another benefit. The concession stands are confined in a very narrow concourse, definitely lacking by today's standards. The concession equipment is obsolete, and in fact, the walk-in cooler is no longer acceptable to the state health department. So there are some problems inside, and some of that infiltration of water is contributing to that. All of the building utilities services need to be updated just to meet standard building codes, including wiring, plumbing, and drainage. And here's our opportunity to incorporate some energy efficiency as well with LED lighting for this ball field. Why am I talking to you about some ball field up in Duluth? Well, it's because that ball field is a big deal to Duluth, our region, and in fact our state, and also our friends across the border in Wisconsin. As Craig will talk about, one of the teams that plays on this field is UWS baseball team. So it has a large regional impact, not just the state of Minnesota, but it also brings in resources from other states. We have over 20 active users of the Wade, ranging from the Duluth Huskies to concerts, local community groups, and other events. A lot of people use the Wade, and a lot of people visit the Wade. Maybe some of you have. And many of you may remember when the stadium was in pristine shape. We'd like to return it to that and even make improvements beyond that. You'll note with the amendment that we have here, it's a one-to-one match. This past year, the citizens of Duluth voted to really protect and support our parks with passing a separate parks levy designed to make projects like this happen and give us a little more control over those projects. And the citizens financially support this kind of effort. We're very proud of our greenfield space in the city of Duluth and our park system, and Wade's an important part of that. So we hope you'll support it too. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, with your permission, I would introduce Craig Smith with the Duluth Huskies.
Welcome, Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, Senators, my name is Craig Smith. I'm the general manager of the Duluth Huskies Baseball Club. Prior to that, I was a City of Duluth employee in charge of Wade Stadium with the as a recreation specialist, so I pretty much am pretty intimate with the building and its structure. The one thing I'm going to talk about is participation. In Duluth, Wade Stadium is the only controlled access facility available to the region. It hosts Minnesota State High School League events, collegiate conference tournaments, UMAC. It hosts UWS games. It hosts American Legion tournaments. It hosts Senior League games, in addition to our 35 Duluth Huskies games throughout the summer. What this facility will do is will allow us not only to have all of those events played without interruption, with rain, et cetera, unless it's lightning and raining at the time. It'll allow us to double the use with an unlimited usage situation. It will allow the city of Duluth to program new activities such as junior league football, which don't have a place to play in the city of Duluth. It's haphazard where they're playing now based on green space. The flag football program for youth, it'll allow the city to use this facility from the end of March through the end of October. Right now, we don't get to use the facility until the third week to fourth week of April and close it the first week of October. From a participation standpoint, that's just unacceptable when we're talking about all the users that are out there, all the events that we can be brought in that will create a nice economic impact for the area. And we definitely need the improvements to the stadium to survive from the Duluth Huskies standpoint. And 2 years ago, we lost 9 games to rain. Of those, 7 games could have been played had we been able to use the playing surface. The infield was ready to go. We had it covered. The outfield was ankle deep in water. The subsoil is red clay based. It does not allow water to percolate into the ground. That, in addition to our lighting system, the ground faults that are in the wiring system actually cause light towers to go out in the middle of games, causing 20-minute delays so that we could recirculate that light, turn it back on. There's a number of serious playability issues that we'd like to get resolved here, hopefully beginning this fall, so it does not interrupt any play in the spring and summer months for all of the users. And we hope that you folks will allow us to do that. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Were you aware that Senator Reiner took a stab at getting the Viking Stadium up there?
I was. I looked at his rationale, and it was sound. I like it.
Still in play. Still in play.
You guys could have had that year-round then. Yeah. Any questions for our guests from Duluth, from the members? Senator Magnus.
Since I live close to I guess you're on the opposite side of the state from me, about 400 miles away from you. So I had to preface that, my question with that, because I don't get there that often. What is your seating capacity in this stadium?
Currently it's 3,453. With this new renovation, it will be dropped down about 1,000 to accommodate the new seating, which is above what our average attendance is on a per-game basis. So we'll get to seat about 3,000 with bleachers versus the 4,400 with bleachers we seat now.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair,
Senator Magnus,
does the University of Minnesota Duluth play there now? Or are they interested in playing with the renovation, or what's the situation?
That would be correct. I actually spoke with the chancellor at Duluth Days down here, and the athletic director, Bob Nielsen, would definitely like to enter into discussions with the city about the possibility of doing that in concert with the College of St. Scholastica, which would allow them to both play there.
And Mr. Senator Chairman, and again, I'm not familiar with your league and so on. What teams do you play? What teams are in your conference and league or whatever that you play?
In the Duluth Huskies, we have teams. We have 16 teams throughout the Midwest, from Battle Creek, Michigan, Waterloo, Thunder Bay, Canada, as far west as Wilmer, Alexandria, St. Cloud, Rochester, La Crosse, Madison. So there's 16 teams that draw fan base from throughout the region, from out the 5-state area.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Senator Magnus, that's the St. Cloud Rocks, by the way. This year is a new Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hate to date myself again, but I think it was 1968 I saw Denny McLean play for the Dukes. And for those of you who don't know who he is, he's the last pitcher to have won 30 games in a major league season for the Detroit
1968.
Tigers. And that's the year he won it?
No, that's the year he won 30-some games, 1968.
Well, then I must have seen him in 64, because I definitely saw him when he was playing for the Duluth Dukes. And so that's even worse. But it's a pretty neat stadium, and it should be fixed up. There's no doubt about it. So anyway.
It's baseball.
Thank you, Mr. Smith and Mr. Hansen and Senator Reinert. Thanks for your presentation.
Committee, Mr. Chair, thank you. And again, Senator Magnus, I appreciate you pointing out, and I
regret that I didn't. It's an $8.1 million project that the city is seeking for, so it's actually a little less than a one-to-one match.
Thank you. Thank you. Members, next we have Senate File 1232. Senator Miller is presenting the Chatfield Center for the Arts bond issue and appropriation.
I got to go.
Senator Miller, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and we're handing out a packet here. As the chairman mentioned, Senate File 1232 is an appropriation for the Chatfield Center for the Arts, and I have the Honorable Mayor and City Clerk with me today from Chatfield, and I'll also note, looks like Senator Nelson had to go testify on one of her bills, but Senator Nelson and I have the honor of sharing the city of Chatfield. She represents half, and I also represent the other half. So with no further ado, I'll pass it over to you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Senator.
Yep, we have Mr. Dr. Hanlon, am I pronouncing that right? And then we have Mr. Joel Young.
That's right.
Mr. Young?
Yeah, I'm Joel Young. I'm the city clerk in Chatfield. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you folks. As I think you're aware, we're seeking the state's assistance in improving two buildings in Chatfield. And we're here today to briefly introduce this project to those who are new to it and to provide a brief update on what has transpired since we were last before the committee. Specifically, we need assistance to modernize these buildings, to make them energy efficient, and to make them handicap accessible. In a way, our story is similar to many others. We have some old buildings that were left behind when a new school was constructed a few years ago. From there, though, our story becomes unique and is quite natural for Chatfield. Once it became apparent that these buildings would become available, it didn't take long to determine how to repurpose them in a meaningful way. While there's no doubt that Chatfield has a rich history in creating jobs, we've been manufacturing office furniture, composite tool handles, and many other products for decades. The Chatfield community also has a very strong cultural history. Our EDA has determined that a fully functioning arts center is the best opportunity to positively impact our community and to facilitate job creation in the area. An arts center builds on the natural heritage of the community. It complements the thriving tourist economy in southeast Minnesota. And it offers a size and style of performance venue that's not found in the area. In the information pack, as they were handed out, you'll find a redevelopment plan that our Planning Commission published that shows how well this fits within our community. You'll see an economic impact analysis and a job creation report that our EDA commissioned to demonstrate the positive impact of this center on the Minnesota economy. There's a preservation plan that was approved by SHPO that guides the preservation and improvement of these significant buildings. You'll see some pre-design work that was done and a one-page summary of the project. This is a project that's ready to go. In the past 2 years, the center has attracted over $120,000 in grants. We've spent over $500,000 of local money improving and operating the facility. And over $115,000 in ticket sales have been generated by artists who perform there. As these dollars roll over, the venue's already impacted the state's economy by $5 million. In terms of jobs, there's been many, and there will be many more. The benefits spread far and wide. We've hired contractors, architects, and planners from St. Cloud, Minneapolis, Edina, Oakdale, Spring Grove. We've had artists from Minneapolis, Pine River, St. Paul, Lionel Lakes, Rochester, and well beyond. Locally, we consistently hire caterers, boiler operators, bakeries, advertisers, tradesmen of all kinds. The Chatfield Center for the Arts has no employees on site, but the jobs to which the venue contributes are very real, and every one of them is in the private sector. Mayor?
Thank
Welcome,
you.
Welcome, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Chair Senjum, and committee members. Depending upon your area of interest.
Mr. Mayor, could you just indicate your name and
yes,
the microphone?
Yes, my name is Don Hanlon, Mayor of Chatfield. Thank you.
Thank you.
Depending upon your area of interest, our project can be characterized as an arts project, a historic rehabilitation project, and tonight as an economic development project. As Mr. Young pointed out, our city did a formal job creation analysis in December of 2009. It was also updated in September of 2010. In that study, it was estimated that through the course of this project, we would create 144 new jobs. That breaks out to 89 construction jobs, 13 related tourism jobs, 40 extended community jobs, and 2 full-time jobs within our community that would go on permanently. We anticipate that additional jobs would be created as it continues to develop. Chatfield Center for the Arts is a regional center. It's not just about Chatfield. As Mr. Young pointed out, we have had entertainment come from all points of the state of Minnesota, plus as far away as Hollywood and other parts across the United States. We are also hosting not only music events, we have a real vibrant community theater organization. The high school is using our theater now for their theater in deference to them building their own theater. They're using our theater. They also use it for concert venues. And now we're finding that we're expanding it into other kinds of businesses. We're hosting weddings. We're hosting other businesses. We've been contacted by a number of large corporations who would like to have us host a program there, their business meetings down there. And so much of what we're doing here is to make this better suited for all of those different kinds of things. Clearly, we are becoming a target destination for an 800-seat auditorium and for other kinds of facilities. And we're seeing people not only from southeastern Minnesota but farther from the metropolitan area even contact us on that. That's really all I have for comments. Thank you for your consideration and support for our project.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Senator Miller, further thoughts? Looks like you have a little time left.
And Senator Nelson wasn't here earlier when I mentioned it, Mr. Chair, but Senator Nelson and I have the honor of both representing approximately half of Chatfield.
Questions of this group for this project?
Not. We'll yield our time.
Thank you so much, Senator Miller, and our guests from Chatfield. And again, thank you for a wonderful visit as we were out on tour. Thank you.
Thank you. You're always welcome.
Okay. Senator Miller is not going far, so we have Senate File 295. It's the Preston National Trout Learning Center.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Now we have the Preston National Trout Learning Center in front of us, and I'm going to turn it over to the experts here to talk a little bit more about this project, but I would ask in your file or in your folders, you have a little pamphlet, and the neat thing about this project is it's not only a regional project or a statewide project, but it also has a national significance, and if you look at the map, you can kind of see that it pulls from Wisconsin and Iowa, as well as most other states throughout the country, and I'll let these folks share their testimony on
Senator,
it.
So. Senator Miller, I do have a question. Have you ever caught a trout?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Okay, I've caught one too, so
yeah,
thank you so much. Look forward to your testimony. Who's going to start?
We'll pass it over to Dr. Spangler first. He's the board chair of the Trout Center.
Welcome, Dr. Spangler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Miller, thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to promote our project in Preston. We are asking for funding to build a permanent home for the National Trout Center at Preston. I am chairman of the board and professor emeritus at the University of Minnesota. I've taught fish ecology and management at the university for 30 years, worked for resource management agencies for an additional 15 years. I've been involved in large lake fish ecology, and this is truly a dream for me. I retired 3 years ago and moved to Preston, where, as Norman McLean might have said, I am haunted by waters. We are the National Trout Center, and this was initiated by our Economic Development Authority of the City of Preston, and I'm assisted in this presentation today by our city manager, Mr. Joe Hoffman, and our Economic Development Authority Director, Ms. Kathy Innerson, and our Tourism Director, Ms. Kathy Dahl. We would like you to know that the mission of the National Trout Center is to conserve our natural and cultural heritage of trout, and their cold water environments by engaging the public through education, practice, and awareness. We're an environmental learning center that champions the cold water stream resources of the Driftless area of the 4-state region that includes the southeastern corner of Minnesota. Our board of directors includes specialists in finance, economics, marketing, trout biology, tourism, fishing arts and crafts, business management, ecology, and resource management. We feel we are strongly positioned to take advantage of the wonderful resource opportunities in southeastern Minnesota, to promote them to a fishing public, and to encourage visitors to come to this area to enjoy these natural wonders. The resource potential of the 4-state Driftless region is quite astonishing. I have in your packets our little statistical trout. The statistical trout tells us that over 450 miles of trout streams have been reclaimed in the driftless area of this 4-state region. Southeastern Minnesota offers miles of public fishing accessible to the public through permanent easements acquired through our Department of Natural Resources. So, too, is public access granted on Wisconsin waters. We have a total value of $1.1 billion in annual economic activity throughout the Driftless region. This astonishing number is the result of over $600 million in direct expenditures by trout fishermen and includes a multiplication factor, 1.4 economic multiplication factor, bringing the total value of that resource to $1.1 billion. Over 155,000 trout stamp holders use our region of the Driftless area, and we have one of the best returns on money invested for any natural resource project that I'm aware of. For every dollar invested in stream restoration, we have observed a $24.50 return annually from that rehabilitation. So this is a tribute to the vision of the Minnesota legislature and its people in providing natural resource management that has truly sustained and restored a wonderful fishery in our area. Excuse me. I want to point out that we have focused our presentation on the regional nature of this trout fishery. At the Trout Center, which we've had open now for the last 2 years, over 1,000 individuals have reported to us their origin, and we find that 3 out of every 4 people who come through the door at the Trout Center have come from outside of Fillmore County. Fully 56% of the visitors to the Trout Center come from the state of Minnesota outside of Fillmore County. And perhaps the best gift of all to Minnesotans is the fact that 20% of our visitors come to us from out of state, bringing with them their interest in recreational pursuit of trout fishing. So this is genuinely a regional resource that returns a huge economic benefit to southeastern Minnesota. Our bonding request is for $3.5 million, and we have a pre-design land acquisition and site preparation and construction project in mind. This will produce a 10,000-square-foot building, illustrated here on the right, with access to the Root River, access to the Root River Valley Trail System, and right in the heart of downtown Preston. So this is a destination that will showcase not only the river, but Preston itself and the beautiful limestone bluff just across the river from the Trout Center.
Mr. Spangler, for those of us that may know Preston a little bit, could you, for instance, point to the branding iron, or point to the location of this site, and the branding iron restaurant is sort of a, okay, is that the site?
That's the Trout Center, and then river along the trail with that the bridge on the left hand or on the right hand side there is the County Road 17 that is one of the major boulevards through Preston. So this is right in downtown Preston.
Right in downtown
it's
Preston.
It's down below the hill that the Branding
Iron
is
okay.
on. Yeah, it's down right at the river
Thank
level.
Thank you.
Preston has the distinction of being named by the legislature as the trout capital of Minnesota, and it adjoins the popular Root River Valley Trail, and just downstream is Lanesboro, of course, which is also known as the bed and breakfast capital of Minnesota. So our hospitality industry is well set up to receive additional visitors maybe brought to the region by our trout center. The next illustration there is an artist's conception of what the Trout Center will look like from the path right down to the river. And the next illustration is a planned view of the two floors that will be the central structure of the Trout Center. The one on the right shows a multipurpose room in the center with classrooms on both sides. And at the lower end of that illustration is an open portal to the river so that the river and the bluff will be visible from within the Trout Center. The right-hand figure is a trout stream on the second floor. It is a living stream, and it would be the only one of any its kind in the United States. The other aquaria provided in the United States are static water systems. This is a flowing water stream, and it will showcase the aquatic invertebrates and trout habitat within the stream itself. So it's a unique building. The final illustration there is the side view showing both levels of the Trout Center, and we anticipate that it will be a real draw for tourism to the area. These artist conceptions are the product of a partnership with the Center for Rural Design at the University of Minnesota, who have agreed to help us in planning this building. And they have estimated that the design cost for the building will be 10 to 12% of the total construction costs overall. It will generate a gross square footage of about 10,000 square feet. The opening of the building will depend upon pre-design taking place in 2012, conditional on funding, of course. Building construction is expected to take 2 years, starting early in 2013 and ending in 2015. And opening of the, building would occur in 2015, and we would have a program ready to go based on 6 years of experience with educational programming in natural trout stream ecology in the region. The immediate economic benefits would be, of course, the construction of the building itself, and the continuing benefits would include a staff of half a dozen people in the fullness of time, together with a working staff of volunteers, totaling something on the order of a dozen individuals. And for a village of 1,500 souls, we believe this will be a significant economic impact on Preston itself, as well as a draw for the larger region. In summary, we believe this project is a really strong economic engine for southeastern Minnesota. It supplements the $1.1 billion recreational fishery that's already existing in the area. The annual benefits accrue to the entire state. Many of the fishermen from the Twin Cities and even farther north in Minnesota come down to the Driftless region for the trout fishing. The benefits will accrue in perpetuity, well beyond the immediate local benefits in jobs and construction. The project complements the three-legged stool that forms a basis for our economy in that corner of the state, that is agriculture, tourism, and the health and wellness industries of the Rochester area. We can only say that outdoor recreation is at the heart of the quality of life in Minnesota. And this project will continue to enhance these opportunities for everyone who calls Minnesota home. I want to thank you all for your attention, and we stand ready to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Spangler. Are there any questions? Dr. Spangler, I'm sorry. I do have one question, and perhaps the mayor will get to it.
Is there additional testimony, Senator?
No, we actually were here to support any questions that you would have for the City of Preston or for the Economic Development Authority.
My question, perhaps you touched on it, operationally, would the City of Preston pay for the staffing and maintenance and upkeep on this building?
Mr. Chairman, actually, a business plan has been developed for the center, and the business plan does show the center being self-supporting. Currently, the City of Preston does support the center's operation with a financial stipend every year. But long-term, we fully expect the center to be self-supporting.
Is it Mayor Hoffman?
Joe Hoffman, City Administrator.
Oh, City Administrator, I'm sorry. Mr. Hoffman, it seems to me, I'm looking, I believe there was a mention of some number of employees that would work here. Would they be employees of the City of Preston, or haven't just thought that far ahead?
Actually, we anticipate that they'll be employees of a nonprofit, being the National Trout Center.
Okay. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Given the hour, I couldn't help but notice the icon here of the Millstream Brewing Company. I was wondering if that was a local. Oh, does it? I'm
sorry. That's part of the Driftless region, but it doesn't happen to reside in Preston.
Darn, okay.
Where is it?
I don't know.
It's that time. Any other questions of the group representing the National Trout Center? Okay, well, thank you so much for being with us tonight and presenting your project. And again, thank you for coming to Chatfield to talk with us as we were on tour.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay. Next, Senator Nelson, Senate File 1417, the Stuartville Fire Station. Welcome, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for allowing me to present Senate File 1417 with you. To you, it is the Stuartville Area Fire and Rescue Department and Regional Emergency Operations Center. With me tonight to describe the need for this project, I have Mayor Jimmy John King and City Administrator Bill Schimmel. If they could introduce themselves to the committee, please.
Welcome to committee. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I'm Mayor Jimmy John King. I'd like to thank you, Chairman Senjum, and the committee members for this opportunity to talk to you about our Stuartville Area Fire Rescue and Emergency Operations Center. On the handout we had here, it'll tell you this facility serves as a regional area of approximately 187 square miles, which looks like that may be increasing. We've had a couple townships talking to us already about taking more area in. We give them fire and rescue and emergency response coverage for two cities, which is the City of Stuartville, the City of Racine, five townships, which are located in three different counties. We also serve as a supplemental support incident command center and training facility for Olmsted County Sheriff's Department and other area fire departments. And because of the close proximity to our school buildings in our town, this serves as a supplemental emergency response facility and a safe site for all of our area school district. And one of the other areas we also cover with this facility is we serve as a supplemental support emergency response facility and shelter and incident command center for all the entities listed above, which also we include the highway commuting and freight transportation traffic of Minnesota State Highway 30, which runs through our town, U.S. Highway 63 and Interstate 90, which is just north of our town, as well as we are the first called for mutual aid for the Rochester International Airport. We have set up approximately a year and a half ago, the City Council and I put together a task force which was made up of citizens of our community, citizens of the City of Racine, township officials, Stuartville City officials, and firemen. They've been working on this. Administrator Schimmel will allude to that when he gets to his part. And I guess one of the last things I'd like to remind you, this is also a totally volunteer fire department by our citizens. So it's it's a great support to our community in this region in which we cover. And now I'd like to turn it over to Administrator Schimmel.
Thank you, Mr. Administrator Schimmel.
Good evening. Thank you, Chairperson Senjum. Bill Schimmel, City Administrator in Stuartville. And thank you very much for your consideration to all the committee and a review of our project. Our project is unique amongst all the ones you've heard about today in that ours fulfills an infrastructure need. It's a public safety infrastructure need. And because of the unique nature of where we sit geographically, as the mayor pointed out, we have quite a territory or regional area that we take care of, as well as transient traffic that comes through, whether that be on a commuting situation for jobs, obviously in the Rochester area, or just the traveling public. We're on a main corridor between Minnesota and Iowa. And then with the I-90 corridor, there is all sorts of transportation and commuting needs that we, by default, become an emergency response situation for if there was an accident situation or emergency response. And then being at the end of the runways, as the mayor pointed out, we're the first backup unit to help the city of Rochester. And then we serve as a supplemental command center for Olmsted County if they should be incapacitated in any way. Our request is fairly small, considering the ones you've seen today. We're asking for just under $490,000. The community is willing to overmatch that. It started, obviously, with some structural deficiencies that we got hit with the trusses in a building. Our fire department has a converted cabinet company, had an addition, cabinet shop, had an addition put on, and we've tried to make do all these years. The fire department obviously had hoped for some extra needs to come along with these structural deficiencies and mechanical upgrades. And of course, as you hear from a lot of different situations, sometimes the eyes get bigger than the stomach can handle. And that's why the mayor said the council stepped in and said we're going to need a citizen task force to help whittle this down. Obviously, our community is in the same situation as the state. We've got to watch out where these expenses go. What had started in some estimates in the $2 to $3.5 million range for some grand plans has now been shaved back to under $1 million. And the community is still willing to help pick up the greater share of that, but we really need, even though it might be small in nature of what you've seen today, it's a huge need of assistance for us to take care of, as I said, some public safety infrastructure needs. And this will involve a fix to the structural deficiencies of the roof in the main section. It'll help with some space needs with some of the unique equipment that we use for that 187-square-mile area. And then just some of the OSHA requirements that we're now getting hit with by using an existing building. Obviously, the big one being ventilation of air. Most of the equipment is diesel. You can imagine what happens when those units get started up. Because of the emergency shelter needs, the two electric companies that help supply Stuartville have agreed to be a part of this in some way with some generation and emergency generator needs. So we're trying to make it more inclusive. And then with some of the equipment needs, as I pointed out, that are unique to the regional territory that we take care of. The other big thing is, and the mayor just alluded to it, we do sit next to the school district site, so obviously the school district boundaries are affected by this. This becomes the first emergency safe zone in case there's an incident there, parent pickup spot, and so we try to work hand in hand, obviously, as you've seen, with the other governmental units and jurisdictions in our area, and then, of course, the citizens. And so with that, I think we're willing to entertain any questions that you all might have.
Any questions of the group from Stuartville?
Mr. Chair, might just
Senator
make a
Nelson.
Concluding comment. Mr. Chair and committee members, and I believe Senator Senjum, you've been to this facility, I recall.
Yes, I have.
And I will tell you, I have been incredibly impressed with this community. They have worked so hard to be so cost conscious for so many years, and their project is extremely extremely frugal. They've involved the the communities in the 187-mile area that they cover. And I would submit, I think it's almost an emergency in what they need here. And I would appreciate the committee's thoughtful consideration.
Thank you very much. Questions? Any further? Thank you, Senator Nelson, and thank you, Stuartville representatives, and moreover, thank you for the hospitality you showed the committee during our visit to your location.
Well, thank you for coming down, Senator Senjum, and other committee members, and thank you, Senator Nelson, for having us up here.
Thank you. Appreciate the consideration. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Moving on, then, we've got Senate File 1108. Senator Higgins, the Minneapolis Nicollet Mall.
Mr. Chair, we're going to let Senator Hayden, he
sure.
has some students who need to get home.
Good idea, good idea.
All right, let me just gather them so we
can. Sure.
Okay, why don't you guys come take a chair?
Who? We're still gathering, Mr. Chair.
Welcome.
Good evening.
Welcome, Senator Hayden. And we have Senate File now 214, the Minneapolis Phillips Community Pool.
Good. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. We're still kind of gathering our group. Well, I want to thank Senator Higgins, first of all, for being so gracious. We have some young people with us, and we want them to get home and get their homework done. And some
Senator
rest.
Hayden, I'm happy that we should have recognized that ourselves. Thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Well, first of all, thank you, Mr. Chair. We really appreciate it in this wonderful evening. It is a great day and a great evening. I just want to thank you for allowing us to have the opportunity to present Senate File 214. It's a bill to appropriate money for the renovation of the Phillips Community Center pool in Minneapolis and authorizing the sale and issue of state bonds. This pool is to renovate and make usable a pool that would be the only free indoor public swimming pool in Minneapolis and the only pool of its kind in a lower income, high minority neighborhood that I represent, the Phillips neighborhood. Access to pool and swimming programs in this community would help to reduce Minnesota's shameful drowning rates amongst minorities, which are some of the highest, while providing valuable public safety and education benefits. Additionally, the project would create both short and long-term job opportunities in the city. This bill is a two-year project. This bill has been a two-year project of Minnesota Swims organization and has garnered the support of Governor Dayton, who has just added this project to his capital budget recommendations. It also is supported by the Minneapolis Park Board, the Minnesota Chapter of USA Swimming, the Indian Health Board, Little Earth United Tribes, the Minneapolis Public Health Advisory Committee, the Humphrey School of Public Affairs, Roy Wilkins Center for Human Relations and Social Justice, and Augsburg College. We are also in ongoing conversations around the operation of the pool with the City of Minneapolis and the Minneapolis Public Schools. This bill has tremendous support from the community, especially kids and teens who are excited to and ready to learn how to swim and enjoy the benefits that this vital life skills offer. I'd like to now turn it over to Ms. Hannah Leader of Minneapolis Swims, who has been at the forefront of this important effort to renovate the Phillips Community Center pool. Thank you. Thank you again, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Senator Hayden, and welcome, Ms. Leader.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, committee members, and Senator Hayden, thank you for allowing me to testify today. This hearing is a accumulation of 2 years of hard work on behalf of Minnesota children and families. We have land of 10,000 lakes emblazoned on our license plates. We are rightfully proud of our abundant water resources. Unfortunately, we have the highest African American and the third highest Native American drowning rates in the nation. Drowning is such a significant public health issue that the 2009-2010 U.S. Congress passed Resolution H.R. 57 that in part condemns the persistently high rates of drowning fatalities among children, particularly minority children, and encourages funding to support initiatives that provide all children access to swimming education. All children in Minnesota should have the opportunity to learn to swim. Minnesota has the second worst academic disparity rate in the country, and despite 25 years of effort to solve this problem, there's been little improvement. Phillips has the lowest education achievement rates in Minneapolis. In 2009, only 21% of Native Americans, 25% of Hispanics, and 35% of African Americans graduated from high school in 4 years. This is a serious drain on our economic resources of our state. It is estimated that each person in high school that does not graduate costs an average of $292,000 during their life. Yet there's a growing body of scientific research that demonstrates a significant relationship between academic achievement and physical fitness, specifically cardiovascular exercise. Swimming is the best cardiovascular workout and perfect for combating the obesity epidemic in this country. This may explain why swimmers have among the highest GPAs and graduation rates in both high school and college. We believe that providing youth in the Phillips neighborhood with access to a pool and swimming will improve our state's educational outcomes and help to lower our achievement gap. We also believe that our programs will positively impact the poor health of the community. There are currently national and state initiatives in place to reconnect children, youth, and families with nature and the outdoors. Our state parks are a valuable educational and recreational resource that are already funded and available. We must equip children of this state with the swimming and water safety skills they need to fully experience and enjoy the outdoors. Poor academic performance, lack of physical exercise, the obesity epidemic, and sedentary lifestyles are all related problems that will benefit from a fundamentally different solution. Please support the renovation of the Phillips Community Center pool and vote yes for Senate File S214. This project provides access and opportunities to develop skills and improve the health and academic outcomes for low-income youth while creating safer outdoor experiences in the land of 10,000 lakes. Saving pools saves lives.
Thank you, Ms. Leader. Thank you very much. Additional witnesses, Senator?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. We have Joe Estrada from the American Indian Center.
Yes.
Welcome, Mr. Estrada.
Hello, Mr. Chairman. I was going to come in and tell you exactly how the Indian Center is involved with the expedition program, which is wilderness travel. 50% of my students do not have water skills, so we have to stick to land travel. It's a process where children challenge themselves, and they have to succeed a goal. Well, of course, there's water. We have to either go around it, because a lot of them were not taught how to swim because their parents didn't know how to swim as well. So right now, 50 to 60% of my students, and I service about 150 to 200 kids per year through a state contract at Wolf Ridge up in Finland, Minnesota, in the Boundary Waters, Superior Hiking Trail, the Black Hills of South Dakota, Wyoming, and my kids need to have water skills to be able to fully enjoy the recreational and competition of being able to have those skills. Those skills have been proven through wilderness therapy that are very well successful to kids to push further. In the 90s, the 80s, the late 80s, we had the pool there. There was a less crime and violence in the south side of Minneapolis. We had gyms that were night programming through the Weight House in Pillsbury, and it seems like those things have gone away. I believe if you put the pool back and you give us access to that pool, we would have less crime and violence on the south side just because of the reunification of families and youth in one team effort. Of course, like anything else, I would ask you to consider this bill, because as we go along, we think we should be a national model for the violence and, of course, all the gang activity in the south side of Minneapolis to get them fully involved in some very, very permanent activities in the south side.
Thank you, Mr. Estrada.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. We also have Wayne White Eagle.
Thank you,
welcome,
Senator.
Ms. White Eagle.
Yep. Hello. My name is Winnie White Eagle. I'm from Eagle Butte, South Dakota, and I want to thank you for letting me testify today. I'm a member from the community. I think this is a big opportunity for children to be involved with this. I used to swim in that swimming pool back then when it was the Boys and Girls Club. I've seen a lot of successful stories from that because kids had somewhere safe to go, and I think it's a big I think it's a good opportunity for it to give it back because children don't have nowhere to go or no place to go, and I think it's a safe place for them to go to attend. And also, I think you'll have low crime rates for them to go somewhere. Other than that.
Thank you very much.
Yep. And Mr. Chair, we have Ms. Salal.
Welcome, Ms. Sola.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to testify. My name is Sahara Lasala. I'm a community health worker, nonprofit organization called CAPI, and I'm also intern at the Family Partnership. I am here to testify about the swimming pool in Phillips area. There is a tremendous desire for the swimming in the Somali community because the families and the parents that live in that area or in the community does not know how to swim. I could remember last year there is a parents who their kids were swimming at Lake Calhoun, and they drowned, and their kids drowned, and they don't know how to swim to save their kids. So they were out there and asked for help, and they did not even speak the language. So nobody could understand what they were saying. So I believe and I think there is good to have a swimming pool where the families and the kids can learn how to swim. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. or Ms. Sala, I'm sorry.
Good. And Mr. Chair, we have our star of our show, Mr. Andrew, would like to just kind of say a couple of words about why he thinks we should have a swimming pool. You can just pull the mic there.
Can you move up to the microphone, or we can move it over?
So.
Mr. Chair.
Hello, Mr. Chair, for. Thank you for letting me testify, and I really want to swim, and other of my friends do too, so we really want this pool so kids can learn how to swim, because if they don't, then if they just go in the water, they probably drown.
Thank you so much. Very well done. Very well done. I could not imagine being there myself at that age.
Well, Mr.
I want to know who this guy's favorite football team is. Who's your favorite football team?
There's a lot of talk about that. Maybe we can bring him downstairs, Mr. Chair. a little later on. Well, first of all, Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen, take him
Mr.
along
Chair,
next time.
Yeah. Maybe Mr. Scott can convince your senator to vote for the bill.
Well, we'll talk about that a little later, Senator Rosen. Well, Mr. Chair, I see we have a little time left. I just want to say, first of all, thank you for allowing us to testify, for these folks to testify. There are others that are here with us that are behind us. So I want to make sure that we honor the committee's time. I know that you allowed me to kind of bump in front of folks. I think, as you can see, this is a very valuable asset. It is going to be used by the entire community. And I will emphasize that though there are pools in Minneapolis, but they often are not in the core cities, and that those that are in the core cities, you have to go through a lot of rigmarole if you don't have money to join like the YMCA and others. So this pool will not only allow people to walk in and be able to join the swim club and learn how to swim. You see Ms. Leader here and others have worked awfully hard to find an operation kind of model that we think is going to work. And so we just once again hope that in your deliberations that you add Senate File 214 to your package.
Thank you so much, Senator Hayden. Pleasure to have you here tonight and certainly your group.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir. We really appreciate
Most
it.
Most especially your champion, Hannah.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Right. Okay. We'll move to Senator Higgins.
Yeah, we lefties over here. Yeah, that's right.
Are you going first?
Yes, after you.
Welcome, Senator Higgins, Senate File 1108, and I believe there might be an amendment to this one. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, there is the A12-0621 amendment. It says delete Section 1, but I think it's actually a delete all. But I believe it's being handed out.
Okay. Members, we have the A12 amendment, A12-0621 amendment. As it's being handed out, perhaps you could just explain it quickly, and I think you already have.
Mr. Chair, this is for the Nicollet Mall renovation, and the change, I believe, is in the amount and the matching fund.
Okay.
Matching amount. So, Mr. Chair, I'll move that amendment.
Senator Higgins moves the A12-0621 amendment. We'll wait till at least everyone has a chance to have it in their hands. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed nay, and the amendment's adopted. Senator Higgins, may proceed with the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. This is the Nicollet Mall renovation, and I have some great folks who want to talk to you. So I'll start with Mr. Sam Grabowski, who's the director of the Downtown Council.
Welcome, Mr. Grabowski.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Sam Grabarski, President and CEO of the Minneapolis Downtown Council. We're the business association formed in the 1950s to promote and to guide the development of commerce in the Central Business District. We are here today to ask for your support of the renovation of Nicollet Mall. I sincerely hope that you can find a document in front of you. This allows me to go at rapid speed through it. I promise you that on some of these pages I won't dwell more than a second. Our presentation has four primary themes to it: jobs and business creation, statewide asset that the mall represents, that is an existing asset that we want to continue to make investments in, and it is deteriorating, so there's a sense of urgency. The Downtown Council and the Nicollet Mall grew up together. We were formed in 55. The first plan for downtown was 59. Within years, Nicollet Mall was created. But as we've grown up, so has downtown Minneapolis. The mall now has, on it alone, 100,000 people working on it today that were not there when the mall was first created. We have at least 35,000 residents in downtown that were not there when the mall was first created. The mall now functions in so many other ways: headquarters of national companies, the site of the Holidazzle Parade, which we own and operate, farmers market, and other important activities along the mall. The slide that says project details tells the story. We want to do the full reconstruction of Nicollet Mall from Washington Avenue to Grant Street. This is a $58 million project. That estimate comes from HGA, Hamel, Green, and Abramson. We have high confidence in it. We are asking for a $25 million bonding request. We will match it with private sector funds alone, $28 million. One of your distinguished members said in chambers the other day that she found it interesting that this is one of the projects that is coming that is actually not taxpayers' dollars matching taxpayers' dollars, her words. This is all a private sector match from the companies and the building owners and operators in downtown Minneapolis. And the business community has been maintaining the mall for decades. At its expense, we will do so going forward. 22,000 construction jobs over the next 13 years of expansion of Nicollet Mall. That includes the creation of two new 1-million-square-foot office towers. It's within this new plan that we have for 2025, a very serious plan for the expansion of growth in the economy in downtown Minneapolis. Over the last 15 years, the years of my presidency, we built five such towers, so two is doable over the next 13 years. We will have 13,000 new permanent jobs in those buildings along Nicollet Mall. We added 2,500 people to the labor force of downtown Minneapolis in just the past year. And so that, again, seems to be a doable goal. And we project that $174 million will be generated in new revenue for the state of Minnesota over those 13 years. So essentially, we pledge to get you your money back. The next slide essentially says that this is about job, business creation, tax-based creation. 130,000 employees now work on the mall, or at least within a block of it. 500,000 conventioners consider this the front door to the convention center. Last year, as a matter of fact, we set a recent record. 750,000 people went to the convention center. It's very important to the recruiting of various companies into our state and into downtown. You'll see a couple of quotes here that are from companies. The first one from Target. The gentleman who wrote this is on our executive committee and would have testified if he could have tonight. He happens to be in Montreal, where he is opening a new Target store. But this is a quote directly from him. We have some smaller companies on the next page. I'm skipping because we have somebody from a major company that's going to tell you about the importance of that to them. We have one slide that just says that you have, in the past, done some job creation and business creation projects. A few are listed there. This one does help the state's very important boulevard, the center of employment for the metropolitan region, to continue to thrive. We have two quotes for you from General Mills and Honeywell. They essentially tell you that even though they're not located in downtown Minneapolis, they rely on the Central Business District as one of their most important recruitment tools. The slide that has all the color on it is one division at Target showing the number of people who travel throughout the metro area to Nicollet Mall and why the mall then is so important to that company. They consider it their off-ramp for their employees. They have four buildings in downtown Minneapolis. If you're interested in knowing what the scale of that is, Minneapolis is in the center, and that orange area is Brooklyn Center. So that's the entire metro area. And then lastly from me, here is a medium-sized company that shows the disbursement of their employees that commute every day into downtown Minneapolis. This company is a large construction company, and they have people coming all the way from Duluth. That must be some commute each day, but that is very much the profile of that company. We're privileged, Mr. Chairman, to have Elliot Jaffe, who is the president of the Twin Cities Metro Market for U.S. Bank, is His duties actually go far beyond the state of Minnesota from my perspective. He's on the road all the time. Elliot, would you please make your statement for the committee?
Thank you, Sam, and good evening, everyone. Mr. Chairman, thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify. Sam mentioned, I'm Elliot Jaffe, Twin Cities Market President for U.S. Bank. I'm also the board chair for the Minneapolis Downtown Council, so I'm actively engaged in the strategic thinking that large and small companies are doing about Minneapolis. Nicollet Mall is especially important to U.S. Bank. Our headquarters are located at 8th and Nicollet. We have two large centers, both one on the mall and one just a few blocks away. And we have 11,000 employees in the state, 10,000 of which work in the Twin Cities. Many of those employees are at Nicollet Mall all the time. The service, the amenities, the access to transportation are a key element of why we keep our headquarters. We've made a commitment that we're going to remain right where we are because we like Minneapolis, but we depend on the community at large to continue to invest and protect this important state asset in a way that'll help us all thrive. Our company has grown our employment in the state 10% in the last 4 years, well above average of most companies, and especially good for financial services companies in a recession, and that reflects our commitment to the community. But as I say, these amenities are a key aspect of that. I just want to add a comment representing the Minneapolis Downtown Council. We've done a fair bit of strategic work and laid out a vision for Minneapolis in the next 12 years. Nicollet is the center of that. We recognize not only its economic importance, but its visibility to the community. We'd like to think of it as the center of the central business district, the economic center of the city and the state, and it's critical that we continue to protect it. And now I'd like to turn it to Sarah Harris, who leads the Downtown Improvement District.
Thank you, and welcome, Ms. Harris.
I'll just hold this. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Sarah Harris. I run the Minneapolis Downtown Improvement District. And as you've just heard from my colleagues here, the Nicollet Mall is a very critical asset to the economic engine of our region and state, but it's time that we now need to preserve that asset. It's a 50-plus-year-old design and a 20-plus-year-old group of materials, and they are all failing. The paver system has failed. the electrical and irrigation systems have failed, and what that means is that it not only doesn't present itself well for the recruiting and the other issues that we've talked about, but it's also a safety issue for people as they're walking along paver systems that are no longer functioning. We have on slide 13 in your packet shown that not only does the paver system not look good or not function well, but what's happening is we have water damage entering into adjacent properties. And many of you were on the tour when we did the Nicollet Mall bonding tour. We didn't get you into the properties to see the damage that is happening beyond what's visible. But you will see on that slide a picture of the main water flow pipe to the IDS building that was replaced 2 years ago. And in that picture, you can see that it is already rusting from the outside with stalagmites occurring, and they will have to replace it again in the very near future. We can no longer contain the damage that is happening on the Nicollet Mall. It's no longer prudent to invest in repairs. We need to replace what is happening out there. And the business community is committed to doing that. We've spent nearly $10 million on repairs in the last 10 years, and we look forward to investing in a full repair, or excuse me, a renovation of the entire Nicollet Mall so that our future repair dollars are well spent. Thank you. Now I'd like to turn it back to Sam, or can I?
Well, Mr. Chairman,
thank you,
members of the
committee. Thank you, Ms. Harris and Mr. Grabowski.
Well, one of the things that I wanted to say to amplify what Sarah said is that the business improvement district that she leads involves all of the businesses of downtown Minneapolis pledging over a five-year period of time $30 million to not only make downtown better, cleaner, and safer, but to make certain that the mall and all of the areas of downtown Minneapolis are continually well-maintained and improved. That is the body that is poised and ready for an immediate match if you will be able to give us these resources. This is one of the outstanding public-private partnerships, I think, that exists in our state, and we have the City Council President Barb Johnson to explain that this is very much a business community and a City of Minneapolis mutual project of interest.
Welcome, Council President Johnson. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. And I just want to say that one of the things the City of Minneapolis has embraced over the years are our public-private partnerships. And, you know, we have private folks hauling half of the city's garbage. We have a privatized IT system in our city, and then also some of our alley plowing is done by private contractors. We know the benefits of these partnerships and how they help us manage our budgets, keep our workforce right-sized, and allow us to find expertise about outside of our core areas. And the oldest of these partnerships is the Nicollet Mall. We in the region have benefited for over half a century from this private-public partnership with the downtown business community. This partnership has grown into a larger relationship with the whole downtown through the Downtown Improvement District, as Sam mentioned. And we are a city that values this business aggregation. It allows downtown Minneapolis to continue to blossom and be successful. It's a proven model for success for the region and for the state. This kind of growth, however, and use leads to the need for major investment in our infrastructure if it's going to continue to thrive. I represent the far northwest corner of Minneapolis in the city, and I don't have any part of downtown in my district, but I know how important downtown is to the success of the whole city and the success of the state in our region. So I would ask your support for this project. And, you know, when people come together with a vision for what needs to happen to support our business community, I think we need to listen. Thank you.
Thank you, Council President Johnson. Any questions of the group?
Chairman.
Mr. Johnson.
I'm just looking at the numbers. Minneapolis is not putting any money into the project. Is there a reason for that? It's all private or state, and there's nothing from the city.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Grabowski.
Thank you, sir. Although I think that Council President Johnson and I could both attempt to answer that, I'll begin with the thought of telling you that what you hear is a project that will be a minimum of $58 million. And so as we go now into the final design standards and we begin to understand how this mall has to function for the next 15 years, I think then the opportunity is ripe for not only the business community to step forward with additional resources, we're already talking about it, but to talk about those aspects of the public infrastructure that are more appropriately also then maintained by the City of Minneapolis. So we're here to tell you that we will overmatch in private sector funds, no new taxes, no additions to a drink of beer or anything in the city of Minneapolis. We will overmatch, but then we expect that the city will also help us. And then on top of that, when we maintain all of downtown through the Business Improvement District, we tax them. That's totally not understood at times, that the Hennepin County and the city of Minneapolis are given a bill for the cost of doing services for them, and they pay it. So they will be a participant for certain. And I don't know if Council President wants to amplify that answer.
Council President Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, this is actually typically how we do a street renovation in our city, which is to tax the folks that are benefiting from the improvement. So it isn't anything unusual.
Okay. Thank you very much, Senator Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Folks, quite an impressive project you're presenting to us tonight. And, we hear an awful lot of talk about jobs around here, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Magnus, you're absolutely right.
A lot of talk, but not much action, to be honest about it.
Senator Magnus, we're getting
about
there.
It, and you're, you know, a heck of a lot of jobs here. And I like that. And I was down in downtown Minneapolis, I guess, 10 months ago, visiting my friend Sam and Grabowski and the council president Barb Johnson, and I spoke there, and I said that it's important that for the state to be strong and vibrant. That we have a strong and exciting and a vibrant downtown Minneapolis. And I was sincere about that. And Sam, you know me a long time. You know I am. And I was trying to find some ways to do that and to help this out. So, Senator Higgins, I look at this and I see other projects come forth. But, my thoughts was to do the Block E renovation and an entertainment center down there. And you'd have a lot of money to help out. You'd have a lot of visitors down there downtown. You'd have more employees downtown. And, I still remain excited and enthused about that idea. And I think, I applaud your group coming forth. But, Senator, I have offered a plan for Minneapolis to help itself a lot. And I would like to have some support for that, too. So I hope we don't forget that one. I just couldn't let that by, Senator, since you were and I were wrestling about manure the other day on the Senate floor.
Senator Magnus, are you suggesting we can do the Viking Stadium, the Block E, and the Nicknam Bowl tonight in one small suit?
I didn't mention the Viking Stadium since our friend Senator Rosen's not here. But the idea when I was down there 10 months ago talking about this, we hadn't even talked about the Viking Stadium with this. We were talking about economic development and using this as a base for the state and for the city to do this. And I'm a farm boy from the southwest Minnesota. But I recognize, what we need is a state. And we need a strong core of our state. We need a good Nicollet Mall. You've got a good proposal here.
Thank you.
But I'm offering you, I keep offering these plans to help out. And, I can only lead the horse to water.
Mr. Chairman, downtown Minneapolis
Grabowski
is always willing to listen to all good ideas, especially from someone who is a fan of our central business district. Yeah. So he should keep his good ideas coming, and we'll keep listening.
Okay. Mr. Chair. Senator Higgins.
On the Nicollet Mall and the area. But I also just want to say that there are a lot of smaller employers and their employees who would benefit by this project as well. The small employers who sometimes provide what you could call the jobs behind the jobs, the back of the house, whether they are the workers in the hotels and the restaurants, the folks who clean those tall towers that we have, and even the food trucks. who are out on the mall, which on a summer day in downtown Minneapolis is just grand to see everybody out enjoying the mall on a summer day, getting something to eat, either in a restaurant, in their outside seating, one of the food trucks, just walking around, or even on Farmers Market Day. And the mall can be so much more. And I think we have a proposal here to make that happen, and we'd sure love your support.
Thank you, Senator Higgins, very much. And thank you to our Minneapolis guests for being here tonight. And
thank you.
We appreciate your presence, and apologize for the, well, it's not quite a late evening, but the evening hours. Thank you. Next and last, I believe, Senator Roebling, Senate File 2200, and that is the Minnesota River and Carver and Scott Counties local bridge bond issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I've been popping in and out of here because the state, the local government committee is meeting, and they're taking up a bill on whether or not to move the primary from August to June. So I'm pretty interested in that bill, so I'll try and whip through this as quickly as possible.
Senator Roebling, there's an A1 amendment.
Would you want to offer that? It actually is pretty much a technical amendment. We re-describe the portion of the roadway that is under consideration here, and it was a suggestion that came from MnDOT on some technical changes. So it still is pretty much the basic plan of a $10 million appropriation for a bond sale that would go to MnDOT for the construction of a very long bridge, about 3,000 feet over the floodplains of the Minnesota River between Carver and Scott counties, between Shakopee and Chanhassen. And members, last year you probably remember.
Senator Roebling, maybe we can just, can we just take up the A1 amendment?
Sure.
Senator Roebling moves the A1 amendment. All in favor, is there a discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Okay. Senate File 2200 is amended. Now you may proceed, Senator Roebling, as you wish.
Okay, thank you, members and Mr. Chair. It would be a long bridge that would, we're asking for this additional money of $10 million so that we could make it a four-lane bridge. And the reason we are thinking we're going to get $25 million from a special fund that MnDOT has available, and they will be announcing very soon whether or not this money is available. But last year we had the big flood, and we had once again all of our river crossings closed between Carver and Scott counties. We have three of them. We have one in Shakopee and one in Chaska that goes between Chaska and Scott County, and then one over by Jordan that runs into the Carver area. And so there was no way for us to get across the river into Carver County, or for Carver County folks or that whole area to get across from us. You could go the Bloomington Ferry Bridge, which dumps you into Hennepin County and Eden Prairie, or you could go through Belle Plaine and end up in Sibley County. But it causes nightmares, and it happens repeatedly. We've had if you want to look at the little handout we have, I think you have a colored one, but in the last 15 years, we've had five closings, sometimes a couple in a year, where the water would recede and then come back up again. And so it's been a huge problem for us. But as I was saying, a couple of years back, Senator Murphy, we had a special session. I think Senator Langseth was very involved in it, when we were going to work on getting some disaster aid for flooded communities. And I was asking for some money for a study to look at which river crossing we could have in Scott County that we could make floodproof of the three that always go under. And it ended up that we ended up not putting money in that disaster bill that year, but the department very courteously came forward and offered to find the money, and they did a study. And this is the crossing that has come out of that study and is most highly recommended. And if we got this to work,
It's not, the PowerPoint doesn't appear to be working tonight.
No. Well, Senator, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Magnus.
Just to that point, is that the highway that used to have the sign out there, the flood level of 65 or whatever it was, and then it was?
That is the highway.
And how high did it get this time?
Senator Magnus, last spring, it was right under that. It didn't quite reach that level. We haven't had any recent floods that have surpassed that, but we came very close last year. And so we've been having more and more flood episodes, and the frustration level has been growing and growing. And one of the issues about going from a two-lane, it's currently a two-lane dirt, I mean, it's set on dirt like a dike.
Yeah.
And what we would do is we would take out all of that soil and build a bridge over it, and it would be just about at that 100 mark level. And the reason it can't be higher is because it has to come off the bridge that crosses the river, and the engineers said that it would have served for every bridge or every flood event that would have occurred except the 65 flood. It might have been at risk with the new proposal that we have. But all the other times, this new proposed bridge would have been able to keep traffic flowing through there. But we don't want to rebuild the bridge over the river right now to get it just that much higher. So this is just a practical way of solving this problem. But I have with me the Commissioner Tom Workman from Carver County and the Deputy Administrator from Scott County, and she had a PowerPoint. And I'm sorry we didn't make copies of it because we thought we could show it, but I want her to run through her presentation.
Senator Obing, committee administrator, will email that. And for those that are you real techie, if you want, because I did it last night, YouTube Highway 101 flood, and you can see the flood on the highway. Deputy County Administrator, Vermilion, welcome.
Thank you, Chairman and committee members, and for the opportunity to talk about 101 today. We actually had pictures of all four of the bridges up that go underwater. We have four bridges in about a 27-mile span between 169 and the southern edge of Scott County, and all four of those, except Trunk Highway 25, go under during these flood events. It creates quite a traffic backup. That is one of the pictures that you see there on the small handout that we did provide. Is the access on every one of the county roads approaching Trunk Highway 169 because it is the only river crossing that is out of the floodplain. As the senator talked about, you can see the map on the small handout that shows 169. It's about a 10-mile shot over to 101, and if you were to go to the east towards Dakota County, it's about 10 miles to Highway I-35. And so that is the other river crossing that does stay out during the flooding events. Because of that, we have a significant delay in traffic backups because of the lack of those crossings during the flood events. As the senator mentioned, we did go through last year so we could bring back a well-thought-out study, prioritized study with some actual costs and data behind it. We spent most of 2011 with Carver County and five other cities and some townships studying it. They did your typical traffic forecasting and historical flooding analysis. They actually did some modeling for the DNR, the Fish and Wildlife and MnDOT, that they would be able to use in the future. And we really took a look at some low-cost alternatives. This is not a $500 million structure that we're talking about for about 19,000 cars a day. It's a $36 million structure we're talking about for 21,000 cars a day. So we really did try to look at cost-effective alternatives. I've been in the transportation business for 29 years now, and I have never, ever worked on a project where five cities all agreed on the same solution, that two counties agreed on the same solution, and that the resource agencies also supported because the benefits of getting the material out of the floodplain and the recreation of the wetlands within that wildlife refuge area. There is tremendous support for this project. The cities of Shakopee, Chaska, Chanhassen, Bloomington, and Eden Prairie all provided resolutions and support, as well as Carver and Scott County, for this project. And I would guess if you asked MnDOT prior to the project, they would not have thought this would have been the recommended structure going into it. But it clearly was, as we got through the data and looked at the economic impacts to the region. 101 itself, which is the recommended bridge to reconstruct or to upgrade out of the study, has been closed three times in the past 2 years. It's been closed, I believe, for a total of 86 days during that. And that is why, when you take a look at it, the cost to Scott County alone to repair at each one of these floods is about $29,000. MnDOT calculates the annual flood to shut it down, to reopen it, to do the repair at about $73,000 per flood event. So that's just the structural cost to the government agencies. When you take a look at the impact to the public, when it's closed in 2009, there's about $670,000 cost to the public. That, of course, vaults forward to about $1.5 million in 2030 estimates. And so when you calculate that they've been closed four times since 2001, it only takes about 54 days to pay back the cost of the structure, and 101 itself was shut down 86 days over the last couple years. So you can see there is an economic impact to this. Currently, the bridge carries about 21,000 cars a day, so it well exceeds the four-lane design standards for either a county state aid highway or a trunk highway bridge. And I think the significant issue that we're here to ask for flood mitigation dollars is that during flooding events, it's expected to carry somewhere between 8,000 to 12,000 additional cars a day when County Road 9, Trunk Highway 41, and County Highway 1 do go down, because they still will be susceptible to flooding. It puts the volumes well over 30,000 vehicles a day. Again, the structure that we're talking about, we had a picture. It's basically a, I call it a concrete jigsaw puzzle on some piling. It's just a bent piling bridge. It's not very fancy. And actually some fill on the north side that would connect it into the Carver County side of the project. The backside of the page does show how it fits in. And the actual river crossing itself, the river channel is right on the Shakopee side, on the left-hand side of your document. That bridge would stay in place, as the senator mentioned. The red then becomes the actual bridge, the low-cost bridge, with the yellow being fill over on the Carver County side. It is currently four lanes in Shakopee. As you approach, you have 101 and 69. They'd handle the capacity for four lanes in both those directions. And you can see the Y on the Carver County side. You have a distinct traffic going off to the left and then back to the right, which heads into Eden Prairie. Chaska, Chanhassen, and Eden Prairie and Shakopee are all significant job generators in that area. And the traffic is fairly well balanced. This isn't a heavy commuter route north in the morning. There is just as much traffic coming into Shakopee and into the Savage area, where there is quite a bit of job base in those communities. The estimates was the last place that we just really wanted to talk to you about. And you can see that this is MnDOT's estimate from the completion of the study in 2011. They put the two-lane trunk highway standard at just under $31 million for construction. To expand that to a county state aid highway standard, add somewhere around 12 to 14 feet of additional structure, and it moves the cost up to just under $37 million. The request is for the $10 million. This generates about 480 construction jobs. The remaining funds, and the $10 million is the key to the expansion and getting us out of the flood mitigation situation, would come from a combination of trunk highway and local funds, either state aid or local dollars, that the counties would have to contribute to the project. Again, it carries a significant volume of traffic. When you compare this to another major bridge you're going to build on the east side, it actually carries more traffic today than that structure at a considerably smaller cost that we're talking about. And during a flood event, it really is a major connection to the southwest part of the state.
Thank you so much. Commissioner Workman, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to take any time. The Carver County engineer was enjoying our generous vacation policy this week. And so I happened to be in the room, and the senator grabbed me. We're doing a lot of things, Scott and Carver County together. We're neighbors, we're friends, we're cousins down there. And 911 centers, transit, and now we're all together on another bridge. And so there is a $500-600 million planned bridge to cross the river at Chaska after I've long perished. It's another Stillwater Bridge deal. We're not waiting. This is the great cheap alternative that'll get me to the grave, so to speak. And so a good deal. As I asked the senator, if we don't get that grant from MnDOT this legislation is likely not necessary because it'll go somewhere else. Anyway, look forward to having the bridge.
Sure. Thank you so much. Well, Senator Magnus.
Mr. Chairman, they must not have had highway they must not have had bridge earmarking back when the commissioner was chairman of the transportation committee in the house. He'd had this bridge done back then after the 65 flood.
That was the policy committee.
I'm sorry.
There were a few winks there, Commissioner.
My distant relative, Chairman Malmau.
Oh yeah,
was a little tight-fisted.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Langsitz.
No, I don't quite understand this. Is this on Trunk Highway 101?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Langseth, it's both. It's an odd situation because Scott County actually owns the bridge. When you look at the diagram there, we took it back as part of a turnback. Carver County still has not taken it back. So it actually is the part that floods is actually Trunk Highway, and then it comes into the Scott County portion, which the county does own, maintain, and operate.
Mr. Chair, we can't do geo bonds for trunk highways, and that I'm trying to figure this one out here. And we can sell trunk highway bonds, but if this is actually a trunk highway bridge, then we can't use geo bonds to do it. We'd have to use trunk highway bonds.
There is a portion of it that is county state aid eligible for it. So there is county eligible portions of the construction.
I'm not quite sure how it works, but, you know, one way or another, it's possible to do it. It's just how we do it, but we got to do it legally. And,
Mr. Chair.
Would agree there. Senator Roebling.
If we get the grant from the state, those will be trunk highway dollars. And then the $10 million would be in addition to that. And then there's some local additional funds as well. So we'll figure it out, you know, on the percentage basis, I'm sure, of how that could be handled. But we do want to do it legally, which trunk highway or general obligation bonds. But, you know, one of the reasons we haven't looked at this option before is because for years and years we've been looking for a super bridge, much like the Bloomington Ferry Bridge or maybe the Stillwater Bridge. And it seems, as Commissioner Workman indicated, I think it's probably 30, 40 years away. And so we just don't want to wait any longer. This is becoming such a big inconvenience for the people in the area that we thought if we could find a less expensive route and a less expensive project to do, it would absolutely be the right thing to do. But to build it again as a two-lane road when it's already at capacity at two lanes, but when you have a flood event and you have all of the cars coming from Chaska and Jordan that can't get across their crossings, we have a real problem. And so if we're doing it as a flood mitigation project, we have to at least have some more capacity for it. Just for that reason alone.
Okay. Further questions on this? Senator Roebling or either your witnesses, I remember vividly the helicopter fly of risen the videos, and there are a lot of cars that get trapped on one side or other of that river, especially during rush hour, literally tens of thousands the way it looks. Would that be an exaggeration?
No, they are backed up for miles sometimes trying to get over the remaining bridges that are open, such as the Bloomington Ferry Bridge, or they move over to 35W. And that's why the cost is so great when you talk about a per-day cost to everyone who uses that. Getting around to go, if I want to get from Shakopee to Chaska or Chanhassen, I then have to go... over the Bloomington Ferry Bridge and go through Eden Prairie and come back through Chanhassen to get to Chaska. It is a huge inconvenience for freight and for people trying to get to and from work. And as Ms. Vermillion mentioned, there are a lot of jobs and workers that cross that river every day between the communities. And That's why it just, and it gets worse and worse as we continue to develop business in on both sides of it. If Chanhassen and Chaska are growing their business parks, and Shakopee is definitely growing its business park, and this is a good thing. And we want that to happen. We're creating jobs down there in the River Valley, but we need to have people be able to get to them.
Okay. It would exceed about 40,000 vehicles per day between the four structures when they're shut down. You're exactly right.
Great. Further questions?
That's a lot. Are there 40,000 cars in Slayton?
Mr. Chairman,
Agnes,
we don't have a stoplight in Maury County. We don't even have a new car dealer in Maury County. But I'm not even sure. We got a couple used car dealers, so we still got that one.
All right. Anything else? Thank you so much, Senator Roebling, and your witnesses. Appreciate you being here tonight. And apologize.